Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I never know about stories like this. Tales or events that seem to be concerning, dominating the agenda of people who pay a lot of attention to politics or the news or social media and everybody else. The actions of Elon Musk's app with regard to images of child sexual abuse and misogyny are creating enormous waves in Westminster, but I wonder whether they are creating waves in your world, and I wonder whether they should be, and I wonder whether you, like me, feel a vague sense of disconnect between the apparent importance of the story and the levels of concern.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump is expected to meet with his top advisers later to discuss the response to Iran's crackdown on protests. Donald Trump announced last night any country doing business with Tehran will now face a 25% tariff from the US. More than 600 people have been reportedly killed in anti-regime protests in Iran over the last few weeks. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt says the president is not afraid to use military force.
Airstrikes would be one of the many, many options that are on the table. Diplomacy is always the first option for the president. What you're hearing publicly from the Iranian regime is quite differently from the messages the administration is receiving privately.
Around 30,000 people in Kent and Sussex are entering a fourth day without water. Southeast water supply issues started on Saturday, with the company blaming bad weather. The government says the situation is completely unacceptable. Anne Nichols runs a nursery in East Grinstead and says she doesn't know when she'll be able to reopen.
In effect, 63 families a day are affected. They've had to find emergency childcare. Some of them have had to stay off work and obviously won't be paid for it. The disruption's huge.
Southeast Water says it is working to fix the issues, adding that some customers could see their water return today. Lord Mandelson's apologised for remaining friends with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein after his conviction. The former UK ambassador to the US declined to say sorry in an interview at the weekend. A government minister says China's planned mega-embassy in London will be subject to all necessary checks. A group of Labour MPs have urged ministers to reject the plans over security concerns. Four NHS trusts in England have declared critical incidents, in part due to the number of flu and norovirus cases. They run hospitals in Surrey and Kent. The measures allow hospitals to prioritise staff and other resources towards emergency departments. And medical graduates from the UK and Ireland will be prioritised for training places in England under new legislation. A bill will be introduced into Parliament today. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says international talent will never be excluded, but that he wants to give homegrown medics the level playing field they deserve. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 10,141. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for large parts of the UK through Tuesday. Northern Ireland will see the best of any sunshine with a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom, the LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Mr. Thing is quite happy with himself. He's just got 20% off home care with British Gas, which covers the plumbing and heating, including unlimited call-outs and repairs. So what we're hearing is the satisfaction of knowing the boiler is sorted. Through song, if you can call it that. So search British Gas Home Care to get 20% off today and keep your shower showering hot. Terms and conditions apply. Ends 3rd of Feb. New to home care customers only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after ten. It's strange, isn't it, how caution can sometimes, what's the word that I'm looking for? It can sometimes leave you looking a little bit daft or even a little bit weak. I mean, everybody, for example, wants to see the Iranian, well, almost everybody wants to see the Iranian regime removed. 20%, as we discovered yesterday, of the Iranian population do not. They want things to stay as they are. But if you urge caution, if you point out that things have gone horribly wrong in the past when the United States intervention wasn't led by a demonstrable idiot, then the chances of things going well when it is led by a demonstrable idiot are probably slimmer than they would have been in the past. So the lessons of history are easily ignored. I find myself, and I bet you would be wondering, if you knew where I was going now, how on earth does the ongoing situation in Iran tie in with the investigation into Elon Musk's AI bot on Twitter? Well, the answer is actually, I'm tempted to leave you to work it out for yourself. I'll go and make myself a cup of tea. Can you work out why I made that observation about caution? Because I think historically, when legislation is made according to news headlines, it often turns out not to be entirely fit for purpose. It can happen in a bit of a hurry. So the news headlines, is it news headlines or is it events? Is the law responding to events or is the law responding to news headlines? Either way, I worry sometimes that attempts to catch up with reality can be a little rushed and a little flawed if they happen too hurriedly. I think most lawyers would agree. There's a reason why legislation and statutes take quite a long time to be written. Every T must be crossed, every I must be dotted. So, when Liz Kendall, the technology secretary, and I'm tempted to have a bit of fun at Lisa Nandy's expense at the moment, because the only thing that's holding me back is the fear that she might be ill or something like that, and it would be embarrassing if I spent 10 minutes wondering where on earth the culture secretary is. Period. Where is the culture? Has anyone seen her? During these times of stories that are profoundly relevant, you would imagine, to her brief. But if she then turns out to be poorly or confined, then I'd look quite mean. But I am baffled by her absence, and it is the job of government to tell us if a senior member of it is not currently able to do their job. But Lisa Nandy, as Secretary of State for Culture, is probably the McCavity of cabinet ministers, isn't she? I mean, whenever you expect her to turn up, she's not there. It's extraordinary. But anyway, it fell to Liz Kendall yesterday, the technology secretary, to announce new legislation. It was passed last year, but she was confirming the timing of it. And listen to this paragraph. It's the third paragraph of the Times coverage. She said, Kendall said, AI-generated pictures of women and children in states of undress that had proliferated on Musk's X platform were vile, adding, it's not just an affront to decent society, it is illegal. They are not harmless images, they're weapons of abuse disproportionately aimed at women and girls. If I told you that the Secretary of State for Defense in the United States of America has just announced that they're going to incorporate this very technology into their military defense capabilities in the United States, you probably would have thought I was joking a couple of years ago. But today, the world we currently inhabit, you'd know that I'm not. That sentence there is at the heart of my inquiry this morning. AI-generated pictures of children in states of undress. AI-generated pictures of children in states of undress. So you say to the technology, here is a picture of a child, show me what they look like undressed. I don't know whether or not it goes or can go further. The phrase sort of deep fake sexual footage appears in some of the coverage. But in the first instance, and it matters, but it doesn't matter completely, does it? Because that idea that Elon Musk charges people for the right to put in pictures of children and ask to see them artificially but entirely convincingly undressed. It's my birthday today. I'm 54. I'm not sure I've ever felt older. Not just because I almost got lost on the way to the studio this morning due to all the building work that's going on at Global Towers, but also because I struggle to properly process this story. I don't quite understand what the relationship is anymore between reality and reportage, between opinion and events, because what would you have said 6 months ago If I had sat there, if I'd sat here, indeed, behind this microphone, and I'd said to you, oh, Elon Musk is going to introduce a new feature on Twitter, which means that people will be able to put pictures of your children there and ask to see them undressed, or engaged in acts that they, in criminal acts that they have never been engaged in. Victims of abuse that they, you know, happily have never actually endured, but now the pictorial evidence will exist that makes it look exactly as if it does. What would you have said 6 months ago if I told you that? And so the government comes out of the blocks, I mean, by their standards, quite quickly. Probably not quickly enough for some, but Ofcom, which I should add, regulates this programme. You know, if I said a bad word now, then Ofcom would be down on me like a ton of bricks. And they have been charged with looking into the technology Elon Musk charges people to use that allows them to undress your child if they manage to get hold of a photograph of your child. And I you know, I'm almost allergic to how big a deal is this questions. But there's a reason for that. There's a reason because it's normally the lazy redoubt. It's normally the question I'd ask if I hadn't really thought about something or if I hadn't really understood something. And the times when I do ask it are the times when I am, as I confessed to you a moment ago, I am a little bit frightened by how baffled I am. I'm not baffled about whether or not this is serious. That phrase there, they can take a picture of your child and ask Elon Musk's technology to undress it, to undress him, to undress her, because it will most obviously and most often be her. That makes my tummy turn over, right? It makes you feel a little bit sick if it's framed correctly. And we spent almost all of last year being told that this was a country where people didn't care enough about our women and our girls. And here is something in the pockets of potentially everybody in the country that allows a hideous form of abuse. I'm not a big fan of hierarchies of abuse, but it's a hideous form of abuse to be visited upon all of them. Elon Musk was trying to incite civil wars on our streets. And yet he is supremely untroubled. In fact, he seems to find it very funny, making jokes, but also warning people not to break laws with it. At the weekend, he labelled Britain as fascist and accused governments, including the UK's, of trying to censor X. So the bloke who's in bed with the president who lies about innocent people being shot in the face by his own security, by his own officers, is accusing us of being fascist because we don't think that people should be profiting from technology that allows you to undress your, that allows a complete stranger to undress your children? So that is today's question. 12 minutes after 10. And I really want your help with this. And I know it's a bit of a cop-out question. It's not a cop-out question. Why am I being so hard on myself? What's the word that I want? I know that sometimes you turn the radio on and expect me to explain things to you. And that's not me being arrogant. You tell me that you do. And I try. And sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I can't think of many on the top of my head, but sometimes I get it wrong. And I sometimes ask you to explain things to me, but that's normally about experience. So later in the programme, we'll probably talk about the power and the importance of an actual ADHD diagnosis. But the sense that I haven't got a proper sense of scale on, it feels disgusting. I'm going to say something that you can pick a hole in or attack if you want, but do it nicely. It feels less disgusting than actual physical abuse, you know. It feels less disgusting than, I've said it, than actual abuse, but I don't know. I've been a victim of neither. The idea of a fake footage, fake film, I've spoken to women to whom this has been done. And the violation is immense. The trauma is huge. And I don't know if it's a little bit of male privilege or if it's a little bit wrong of me to say surely it's worse if it happens than it is if it doesn't, even if someone create a picture of it of it happening. But that feels a little bit moot to me today. It just feels as if this is a gate that should never have been opened. And if it has been opened, then it must be slammed. It must be slammed shut and locked. It's extraordinary to reflect upon the fact that members of Donald Trump's administration have rallied behind Musk's complaint of censorship. So the British government wants to stop a social media platform offering subscribers the opportunity to virtually undress your children, and the richest man in the world is describing it as censorship and fascism, while very unconvincingly urging people not to break the laws that he's given them the tools to break. Do you get where I'm coming from? Maybe you feel like I feel, in which case, let's just sort of counsel each other a bit this morning. What's the question you would ask? If it's not how big a deal is this, what would be your way into trying to understand this sense of tension or even disconnect between what is happening, what we are being told is happening, and what we are supposed to feel about it? You can create and share sexualized deep fakes. Ofcom can fine X hundreds of millions of dollars if it wants to. It could even ban X in the UK. And in the space of 2 years, I've gone from being a big, big fan of it to wondering now whether Musk is so out of control that a ban would be the only thing that works, because he's never going to do anything voluntarily, and there's no sum of money on the planet that Ofcom could extract from him that would touch the sides of his established fortune. So the first question is, well, am I going mad, or is this one of the grossest things that's happened in the longest time? An argument happening about whether or not businesses should be stopped from selling technology that lets perverts undress children. We're having a debate in the English-speaking world about whether or not governments should or should not stop billionaires selling products to perverts that let them create sexual deep fakes of children. Women are a big part of this story as well, but I think the child angle probably excites a stronger emotional response. I mean... The other question I don't like asking you, because it makes me feel a bit lazy, is what's going on? How big a deal is this? What's going on? Is it me? Am I missing a point here? Is this not as serious as Liz Kendall contends, as I sense it is? I mean, is it the case that Donald Trump's cronies describing it as censorship or even fascism have half a point that I just can't currently see? I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. I wonder whether sometimes we're all a little bit guilty of concentrating too much attention on the things that are easy to get excited about. And a little bit of lazy journalism, misrepresent some of the facts, introduce a nice bit of polarity, a little bit of binary thinking, invite you to pick a side, and then we'll start taking pot shots at each other. I do it. Of course I do sometimes. But when I pick a side, I pick it sincerely. I pick it authentically. I don't pick it for clicks. But this just leaves me absolutely... I nearly didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it yesterday because of the feeling that I'm trying and largely failing to describe to you now. It historically doesn't work when I come on the radio feeling like this. It's what I mean when I apologise for not being here to explain things to you today, because I have explained it to myself and I don't understand. It's as if I've thrown a rock into a pond and it hasn't rippled. I don't understand the reaction or the lack of reaction or the absence of reaction to what I think is happening here, to what I am 99% certain is happening here. It's as if a big rock has been thrown into a pond and it's only on page 7 of the Times. A massive great rock has been thrown into the pond of our population and it's not on any front pages today. Are we frightened of Elon Musk? How many questions are there attendant upon this story? Are we frightened of Elon Musk? Is getting Twitter out of our country the same as trying to get eggs out of a baked cake? Am I wrong to be as disgusted and as concerned as I'm pretty sure that I am? Why is there not more uproar about this? Where are all the people obsessed with protecting our women and children when it is an asylum seeker abusing them or a refugee doing terrible things? I share your disgust that any form of abuse against any child or woman, but why are we quieter about this one? Why are we not seeing the sort of outrage and disgust that I'm not actually sharing with you? I'm sharing with you confusion and bafflement at the absence of disgust. I'm not sharing disgust because I'm not confident in my disgust. I'm thinking, well, what I feel must be a bit wrong because it doesn't seem to be felt by anybody else. Elon Musk is defending it. Members of the White House are attacking the people who are seeking to end it. David Lammy, to be fair to the fella, has described it as entirely unacceptable and claims that J.D. Vance agrees with him. So it won't be all of the White House. But why is this even a conversation? Why is this even a debate? Tell me your thoughts about this story. Okay, that's probably the best way into it. The questions I like or would like to have answered are the Marvin Gaye element. But this, why doesn't this feel bigger? 03456060973. But also, on days like today, will you remind me of this in the future? Sometimes we can provide each other with a bit of a talking cure, almost a form of therapy. Let's just talk about this story together. I'll try to listen a bit more than I usually do, but why don't you ring me and tell me what this story is doing to you? How this story makes you feel? What this story makes you think? 03456060973 is the number that you need. Elon Musk is selling people technology that allows them to create deep fake sexual images of your children. Elon Musk is selling people technology that allows them to create deep fake sexual images of your children, and he thinks that attempts to stop him are fascistic or censorship or both. What's happening here? 03456060973.
LBC. Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at Ocado.com.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at TamesLinkRailway.com. Terms apply.
Find me somebody to love.
Hey, Beds, wake up. The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on.
Sorry, I'm just so comfy.
I bet you are. There's up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses. So shop now and save big. Dreams. Love your bed.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
22 minutes after 10 is the time. Well, you know my thoughts. I took a very long time sharing them with you, so I'll start listening to yours. Siobhan is in Gravesend. Siobhan, what would you like to say?
Oh, my God, I'm livid, James. I'm so angry. I have been debating with a lot of people about this on X.
Have you?
Over the weekend.
So it's still on there, then?
Oh, I only went back on there after the killing of Renee Good, and then obviously okay. This has happened. I mean, my career in care, I did have a brief foray into managing a children's home, so okay. I do have some understanding. I mean, I'll just expand. So we know deep down this is disgusting, but this can actually be used by paedophiles to bully children, to extort from them, to represent themselves as children. It really is a tool for paedophiles. There's no doubt about that. The arguments I've been having are, funnily enough, all with Patriot accounts, you know, the sorts with cross avatars and
all Billy Bunch of numbers. We're familiar with the phenomenon. So we don't know how many of them are actually real people expressing sincere views, because they hide behind flags. But they're obviously, doesn't really matter, does it? Because they are contributing to public discourse.
Exactly, but they are, you know, making the most ridiculous arguments, and it actually proves, like I was saying to your producer, that these people are just, well, we know the sort of people, the sort of perpetrators they're after solely, but they have no deeper understanding of the subject, and although I've tried to explain to them these things, and then they say things like, well, first they say, well, they're only fake, and I explain, you know, why that's harmful. Then they'll say, well, other AI platforms can do this, but the difference is they have guardrails and safeguards.
Well, it's regulated. I mean, he took it away from people who haven't paid him the other day, didn't he? I mean, it may not have been an entirely effective move, but it demonstrated that he could just switch it off for people, so...
Disgusting that, you know, you can have a paid prescription to engage in this. But other companies will engage in multi-agency working, so they'll, you know, refer, you know, a report to the relevant authorities, and ex-Grok will not do any of this.
Do you feel you make any progress when you engage with these accounts?
Absolutely not. And in fact, I get blocked. I get called the most disgusting names. I follow someone who actually shares people that do this without actually showing images. And I say, because they say, oh, no one's actually doing this. And I said, would you like me to show you the accounts that are doing it? Without fail, the answer is always no, thank you.
I'm just looking at a couple of my messages from probably the kind of people you've been dealing with. James, your dislike, this is from Bill. I must have a look at his history and see what other sort of messages he sends to the program. Your dislike of Twitter is historical. I loved Twitter. It's X I've got a problem with. You all know Twitter is freedom of speech that the left dislike. So it's left wing now not to want Bill's children to be exploited by perverts. Bill thinks that it is his political right to encourage people to exploit his own children if he's got any. I'm sure you're aware. Here it is. It's exactly what you said. All AI can do this. It's not just Twitter, mate. So, I mean, this is a bit like saying, well, what's the point of stopping that abuse over there? Because somebody else over there is still abusing people.
That's exactly what I said in the comment. Someone being arrested for paedophilia. Oh, look, my neighbour's doing it. Okay, off you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Is part of the reason, I mean, you are obviously not in any doubt about your feelings, but you heard my slightly interminable introduction today, and I hope you picked up that some of my confusion is very sincere. Is it because we're a bit insecure about our understanding of the technology? So it feels absolutely hideous, but I don't really understand the tech, so maybe I'm missing something here, and it's quite relevant to the conversation. And people like Bill, the paedophile apologist, he actually has a point that I don't understand because I don't understand the technology. And he's not a real paedophile apologist, he just looks like one to me.
I don't understand the technology, James. I'm the same age as you.
Yeah.
I'm 50. Did you say it was your birthday today?
I did, yes. I probably shouldn't have done, because it sounds like I'm begging well, look at that. Another Capricorn. Congratulations to him, then. Isn't that nice?
But, yeah, I'm the same age as you. I don't understand this. You know what our computers at school look like.
Mm.
I really don't understand this, but I understand the morality of it. And you only have to... there's an NSPCC report on this, regularly available online, why AI child sexual abuse image proliferation is harmful. It's not difficult to find for anyone with a mobile phone.
No. And so what is your theory then, having put a bit more effort into it than I have, on not so much the weirdos like Bill and the ones that you've been encountering online, but the rest of us, the people who you might expect, that, you know what I said about throwing a rock into a lake and then there not being any ripples. It's in the Commons, you know. Liz Kendall has announced an acceleration or an introduction of laws, but it doesn't have a sense of public outrage that you and I might have expected. Do we know why that is?
I just don't think the perpetrators or the known perpetrators look like the, you know, they are not fitting the agenda. And also this free speech, this whole free speech debate.
It's not free speech, but I guess if you're a bit thick and someone is telling you that your free speech is under threat because the bloke over the road wants to carry on making deep fake sexualized images of your children and you don't stop to think about it very much, then free speech just becomes one of those fig leaves, doesn't it? One of those maypoles around which imbeciles dance without understanding what it is that they're either celebrating or protecting. Funny, isn't it? Bill's a big Donald Trump fan, needless to say. So I guess it's footballification as well. If you are a big Donald Trump fan, let me read that message again. We all know Twitter is freedom of speech that the left dislike. If you think that a pervert making sexualized images of your children is an exercise of free speech that should be protected in law, Bill, I don't actually have a word to describe you. But I'll stick with paedophile apologist because that seems to... That might just be a powerful enough phrase to make you stop and pay a little bit of attention to what's going on. And I focus on you because you're the only one I've got in my inbox. So Siobhan is dealing with imbeciles like you, with dangerous, dirty, disgusting imbeciles like you on a daily basis. And Elon Musk considers them to be his fan club, I think. Is that part of the problem? Is this all the weird inadequates who've spent their lives hiding in shadows and lurking in bitterness? Now, thanks to Elon Musk, suddenly feel like this is their time in the sun. And any criticism of him and the platform that lets them pretend that they matter is going to be existential and is therefore to be violently resisted. I told you I didn't know, and I think I'm proving it with every sentence that I say. Thank goodness Siobhan was here. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Germany's Chancellor says he believes the Iranian government is in its final days and weeks. Friedrich Merz has repeated calls for authorities there to end the violence against demonstrators. Around 25,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex still have no water for a fourth day. South East water supply issues started on Saturday, with the company blaming bad weather. And the Scottish Government will deliver its final budget later, ahead of May's Holyrood election. The Finance Secretary, Shona Robeson, said it'll reflect the priorities of both the government and the public. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for large parts of the UK today. Northern Ireland will see the best of any sunny spells, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We're real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears. Give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 33 minutes after 10, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Well, there's no one or two sick individuals notwithstanding, there's no debate here about whether or not this is acceptable, whether or not you give people the tools, charge them. All the things you're not allowed to sell people, the tools with which they can create deep fake sexual imagery of children should be relatively near the top of the list. But the air, is it? I'm trying to unpick something that is probably akin to many of the other conversations we've had recently. It's got something to do with being terminally online. It's got something to do with what the echo chamber Elon Musk has created on X has delivered, what it has given people, a sense that they're the normal ones when they are, in this case, obviously, profoundly, dangerously abnormal. It all linked, perhaps, but then why aren't more people who are not abnormal, why aren't more normal people standing up? Why is this story not garnering the sort of attention that I would expect? This is really strong and interesting, as always, from Emma, who writes, this was already happening, but it was rightly confined to the degenerate parts of the internet where you did not go. It was defined as unacceptable to society. They've nailed it, haven't they? It's not about whether or not the technology exists. It's about sticking it in the shop window and letting everybody buy it. So it was confined to the degenerate parts of the internet, and it was defined as unacceptable to society. It's the widespread deluge that unnerves me, not just because non-consent is violence, and it's unarguable evidence of an escalation of acceptable violence in our culture. It's an incredibly violent act to strip somebody naked against their will. Isn't it? And they see that as inevitably overspilling into overcorrection, which is where I opened this morning about the dangers of speedy legislation. Women are being put in their place. The backlash against Me Too, the Tates, the Petersons, the Trumps, has been allowed to escalate and entrench because it's a privileged male position, and this is the result of that entrenchment. Men hate being told how they can and can't, this is me speaking now, how they can and can't treat women. There's a certain type of man, Andrew Tate being the best example, think they should be able to treat women however they want. And it's baffling to many men. But it has enormous cachet. It's a very attractive philosophy for men, for some men. Women are being put in their place, and it bridges everything. From something I don't know about right through to the trad wife cult. I think about that quite often, actually. So it's just about being compliant and submissive and doing the bidding of men. What you're seeing in stark relief is the lackadaisical treatment of a systemic problem when it is simply considered a women's issue. And they also posit the idea that this is a logical progression from the boys will be boys or the locker room talk attitude to women. And the reason why Elon Musk considers it normal is because he's terminally online in all the wrong places. Jim's in Bordeaux. Jim, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi. My background basically is protection of vulnerable people. Right. I'm now retired.
Okay.
The question I would pose is basically whether Musk himself, in effect, is a perpetrator. And if you think about the parallels between the Epstein scenario, the grooming gang scenario in the UK, the behaviours are pretty similar. The devices by which the abuse is occurring, albeit, are different, but there should be some questions as to whether this really is an internet issue for Ofcom, or whether there should be some other sort of criminal process brought to bear as to whether or not he is actually facilitating abuse and encouraging it in all probability.
I think that you've couched your opinion very carefully and very helpfully, so I'm grateful to you for that, because my little libel alarm started beeping very quietly in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I know that you were conscious of that. I didn't know it until you finished speaking. And that, I mean, it is illegal already, it should be and will be imminently. But who will be guilty of the crime? The person that provides the means with which to commit it, or the person who uses the technology to do it? I sense you think both should be.
Yes, indeed. I mean,
how can you not be complicit? How can you not be complicit?
Absolutely. If one provides the tools by which abusive behaviours can freely occur, there has to be some accountability, in my estimation. Regrettably, I think our government is somewhat reticent about tackling the tech bros in America at the moment, and perhaps are not being as forceful as they might be in terms of looking at this. I think the whole freedom of speech issue is a gaslighting issue. I don't think it actually bears a...
No, you're right. It merits repetition. But it doesn't matter, does it? It's like Brexit means Brexit or sovereignty. The words provide people with something to say to disguise the fact that they are either idiots or dangerous or both. So that's what you say. You just say freedom of speech. I don't understand anything, but I'm a team Elon. Therefore, I'm just going to shout freedom of speech. Twitter, lefties hate Twitter. Therefore, I'm in favour of my own children being abused in this fashion by letting them be turned into sexual deep. I mean, you're right. It is just an insane avenue of contemplation or avenue of conversation, but that's what social media has done to us. It's made insane avenues of conversation look like Main Street, look like high streets. What can they do? I know this is probably tempting you out of your area of expertise, but Musk is not in any way sanctionable. He's not regulatable. Even if he didn't have the backing of the US administration, his wealth makes him bigger than most countries. His wealth makes him untouchable in many ways. He can't be hurt financially. He probably, his ego and his deep-rooted shame and self-loathing probably won't allow him ever to climb down it becomes a sort of high noon situation where the only tool at the government's disposal is probably some form of outright ban on the whole thing.
And that does then allow
a bit of a free speech argument.
I think there would be fertile ground to investigate as to whether or not reputational loss. I mean, look what happened to Tesla for a period of time after some of his behaviours exhibited certain concerns in people. I think it's all part of the same problem we have here, that he is exceptionally powerful. But nevertheless, Epstein was very powerful.
Yeah, but he was in the shadows. He was in the shadows, Jim. He might be a kind of John the Baptist.
This guy is right out there at the moment.
Exactly.
In plain sight. And I still think it's worthy of some sort of questions being raised about his personal involvement in all of this.
Well, that line, I don't like quoting myself, but it is, at the heart of what we're saying, and someone's kindly typed it up, an argument is happening about whether or not businesses should be stopped, and can substitute businesses from billionaires, should be stopped from essentially selling technology that lets perverts undress children. And apparently there's a debate, and I'd love to pretend it was just Billy Buncher numbers with his bulldog avatar and his grasp of absolutely nothing, or our mate, was it Bill, who loves all this because it upsets the lefties? That is an extraordinary position to be in. I spoke to people during Brexit who insisted they didn't mind if their children were poorer because it would upset the lefties to leave the European Union, but not minding that your children are victims of sexual deepfakes, mate, because it will upset the lefties, is an extraordinary place to have ended up in. But given that it's a position being espoused by the richest man in the world and all of his powerful, many of his powerful acolytes, both within and without the White House, you can't just pass it off as lunacy. You have to recognise it as relevant. It can still be lunacy, but it is not irrelevant. It's profoundly relevant. What on earth is going on? Is this the ultimate manifestation of footballification? Like, you have picked your side, and it doesn't matter what happens, you will always back your side. Musk, as the sort of patron saint of weirdos and inadequates, has guaranteed their support simply by dint of what he said about foreigners or immigrants or Muslims or so. Is that it? Is it that simple in terms of public discourse? Because that doesn't explain why the rest of us aren't more motivated. Jason is in Loughton in Greater Manchester. Jason, what would you like to say?
Happy birthday first.
Thank you.
I'm a survivor of abuse. I was abused as a child.
I'm sorry.
I'm sick and tired of seeing deepfakes. They're all over the internet, and they've been over the internet for 20-odd years, and it's been ignored because it's been in that quiet, dark recess of a place that we dare not talk about and we dare not go.
Yes.
Now Elon's decided, oh, I'm going to put something out which has also been out another 2-3 years called AI. A group actually called AI. And they've been doing it for 2-3 years. Now he's put it on Grond, and we're all up in arms about it. And rightly so, we should be up in arms about it. But we are doing it just because who it is. And I want
Grond. No, we're not.
No, we are. No, we're not. Let me just finish.
I will.
I want Grond gone because the simple fact it's allowing this.
Yes.
I want it gone because it's allowing this. However, I do feel that it's been allowed to progress this way just because of who it is. And I'm not saying he's right. I think he's a disgusting individual.
Mate, Twitter is an enormous social media platform. If he'd never bought it and this was happening, we wouldn't have a focus for our emotion. No one would be talking about Jack Dorsey, but it's got nothing to do with him and everything to do with what is being done on his watch.
But it has got something to do with it because he's allowing it, and that's what I'm trying to say.
I don't understand your point. It's my fault, I'm sure. It is about him because he is allowing it.
He is allowing. As I said before, we had it in this dark recess of the internet, but he's brought it to the fore. And because it's him, he's been allowed to do this.
I did misunderstand you. Okay, so his impunity, his wealth, his power, his status allows him to do something that actually, I don't know that anybody else would particularly want to do, but nobody could do it. Nobody could deliver this. It's a bit like if it was a drug that was being sold to our children. It's as if it's gone from being sold in one bus shelter in one corner of town to being available on every single street corner of every single street. It doesn't mean you have to buy it, but it's available on a scale that is unthinkable to people who were aware of the existence of a single drug dealer in one bus shelter just 2 years ago.
Exactly. It's been allowed to extend to beyond what it was. And we should have not nipped it in the butt 20 years ago. And I understand governments.
They could have made a speech about this and nobody would have known what they were talking about. They probably didn't even know about it themselves, and that could be a failure. But it's a failure of omission, not a failure of commission. It's something they have not done. It's not something that they have done wrong. How do you think it ends? What do you think happens next, Jason?
I honestly think we will see a paedophile using those things to target a child. They'll start off with the fakes. And they'll talk and they'll slowly and blackmail and then they will accuse the child.
I'd be amazed if that hasn't already happened.
I would be myself, but that's where we'll hear that soon. I've got no doubt about it. We will hear that someone used some of these deep fakes, got seriously infatuated with a child, abused the child. All because of these deep fakes.
I hear you. Or simply say, I've created these deep fakes to a child, and I will, because this is how a lot of abuse happens in real life, as opposed to virtual imagery, fake imagery. You get a child to send a picture of themselves, and then you threaten to disseminate it. You threaten to publish it. You threaten to send it to their school or everybody in their contacts. If they don't then do other things for you. I mean, it is, there you go. If you don't care enough, old Bill there, the paedophile apologist who wants to upset the lefties by letting his own children be abused by paedophiles, that's how it works, mate. That's how it works. It is a tool for actual paedophiles to groom, exploit and pursue children they intend to abuse in real life, not in a deep fake or an online way. And Elon Musk thinks that we are fascists. I say we, quite proudly, actually, because it is the British government, Labour, Conservative, I don't care which. He thinks that we are fascists because we don't think he should be letting people do that. President Trump has a free speech czar. Irony died months ago, didn't it? But her name is Sarah Rogers, And she's now comparing the UK to President Putin's Russia. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking if a senior member of Donald Trump's administration is comparing us to Vladimir Putin's Russia, it's probably intended as a compliment, right? Because they love that guy. But no, this is not intended as a compliment. It's 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I don't think that a screen is an inherently bad thing. And I think, in fact, that is it going to be impossible to raise a child now without having access to some form of screenage? And to be honest, if we're really candid, you as a parent need the breather. That's no bad thing.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Party time! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
News, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Hillary's huge winter sale is on, and now there's even more savings for the window wise, with an extra 10% off everything until the 2nd of February. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, keep the cold out and the cozy in with free thermal lining on our favourite curtains and Roman blinds. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Whoa. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I mean, there are a lot of people making quite a lot of money from it now. And, since Musk bought it, it doesn't just provide an emotional payout to people. It allows them to feel validated and vindicated and even popular. Nobody, if you've got 1,000 likes on a post or 10,000 likes on a post, nobody's going to go through it looking to work out how many of them are real. There's some fascinating research the other day into how much of pro-reform UK posts on social media come from bots and come from fake accounts. But no one cares if you're getting paid for it. You're going to be laughing. So I suppose there is a logical reason why you would sort of side with the paedophiles, because there's a few quid in it for you. And the ban is only in the context of Musk failing to address this issue. So you shouldn't really be complaining about your free speech being compromised. You should be complaining to the bloke who owns the platform, because it is possible that through his arrogance or his absence of empathy for victims of this kind of crime and potential and future victims of this kind of crime, he doesn't feel bound to deny this technology to you. Remember, he's got the ability to do it. We learned that last week when he banned it for people who aren't paying him. But you can still do it if you pay him. So it's nothing to do with freedom of speech. It's everything to do with failure to protect children. Here we go. This is how you defend it while also proving beyond any reasonable doubt that you have the integrity of garden furniture.
Nothing from the current set of regulators and government would surprise me when it comes to the suppression of free speech. Do we like and welcome the particular feature on Grok that's made the news over the weekend? No, but let's talk to Grok. They've already made one or two steps in our direction. My fear is we'll end up suppressing Grok and further suppressing free speech, and we do not want to do that.
What are they actually talking about when they talk about free speech being suppressed? That bloke, you can't turn your television on without hearing his latest whines and complaints. Is it just the racist lies? If you couldn't tell racist lies on Twitter, people wouldn't think that London was unsafe. If you couldn't tell racist lies on Twitter, people wouldn't think that immigration in this country, as we discussed yesterday, was rocketing, when in fact it's plummeting. So you can't have a populist political movement without lies, usually, well, always racist lies, with a side order of misogynistic lies. And any attempt to stop anything on that platform from reaching a wider audience threatens their ability to carry on telling their racist lies. Is that too simplistic? Is that too obvious? Because you have a country now, and I think the UK might be worse than almost anywhere else, where the facts have been completely subsumed and overtaken by, I'd like to say feelings, but by carefully cultivated racist reactions. And I can't really look at X without thinking, if you're defending it, you must love the racism, right? But who knew that you loved racism so much that you would throw children under the bus? You'd throw children into the hands of paedophiles and perverts because you're worried that they might put some limits on your racism, your ability to be racist in public. And, of course, to make a few quid out of it, which many people are now doing. I haven't seen any research into how many or who. But I think I would be amazed if Nigel Farage's MPs weren't fairly near the top of the list of people in this country making a few quid out of this technology. Whether or not that motivates their decision not to come down like a ton of bricks on people threatening, quotes, our women and our children, end quotes, I do not know. But I think that's probably it, isn't it? So much, because it's the thing that if you're racist, you get it, and if you're not racist, you never will. How can it be such a powerful drug that you will actually think about what addiction is? You know, you'll nick your grandmother's jewellery. You'll mug your own mum to feed your habit. If your habit is racism, everything else withers. Nothing else matters. I don't care about paedophiles. Don't care about... I know I pretend to, but that's only when the abusers are foreign or look a bit foreign or sound a bit foreign. If it's happening on social media and it's on a platform owned by one of my heroes because he does Nazi salutes and endorses my own racism and even lets me make a few quid out of it now, and he's brought back all the people that were banned for epic racism... I'm team racist, which sadly this week also makes me team paedophile. Am I sounding on the money there? Or is there something else going on? Is it not Occam's razor? Is the easiest, simplest answer currently eluding me? John's in Edinburgh. John, what do you think?
Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm all right, John. I don't like this story, but I feel I understand it a little bit better than I did at 10 o'clock.
Well, I've got a couple of things. One is, I'm going to actually try and de-footballification it even yeah. more, but it does unfortunately make it more nuanced and awkward to deal with. Is one of the other constituencies that's been notably quiet that I would have expected to be really loud on this is the anti-trans groups on Twitter that I don't want to get into that argument because I find that it's too nuanced for me. Sure. And that I end up agreeing with many people on both sides about many things. However, even the greatest cheerleader, and I'm not going to mention her name because it just causes too much fallout for you, hasn't said a word about this. And I think
I'm always it's a little bit the weirdos who are saying that you can't object to what Israel's doing in Gaza unless you go and protest about Iran, a country that is not our ally. Yeah. I'm always a little bit wary of protest policing. My conscience is my business, but anyway, I mean, I'm not shutting you down. You can carry on down this avenue if you want, but it's 10:58, and I want to talk about the X element.
Okay, no problem. It was merely an observation, and I'll leave it
sure.
there.
Okay.
And I just feel that there's a footballification that people who support X for one reason find it difficult
right.
to speak
out. Because it is the platform where many movements have gathered, and since Musk bought
yes,
it, their opposition or have been shut down in many cases. They kind of have a clear playing field now, so they would worry about anything that compromised X's power and status.
Potentially,
okay,
yes,
maybe.
Potentially. But with regards to the people that keep saying to you, every AI platform does this, why are you picking on Grok? There's two points. One, I think it was your messenger, I think it was Emma earlier on, made a really interesting point about how in the public eye Twitter is, where it's standing is. So there's a proliferation issue because it is also a social media platform,
for
unlike
sure.
those other AI platforms.
Yes.
And the other thing is, Elon Musk, in response to this, I'm sure you've seen this, but he posted a jocular AI-generated picture of himself in a bikini in response to this.
I heard.
So, you know, the leaders and the owners of other AI platforms are not responding to this by showing their complete contempt for abuse of women and girls by putting up AI-generated pictures of themselves as a joke in a bikini.
No.
For all that we should be... Yes, absolutely, we target anyone, any platform that's doing this, whether it's through Ofcom or anyone else, yes. But that does not by any means prevent the fact being that Elon Musk absolutely does not care and is gleefully showing that he does not care about this issue.
So there
is a different point here.
No, you're right. I think I misunderstood that caller, actually. He wasn't really saying, as a criticism, people are only getting upset about this because it's Elon Musk. He was saying this can only happen on this scale because it's Elon Musk. But your point stands. I think it's probably that thing we just stumbled into. Imagine John brought some other constituencies of thought into it, but imagine that you love what X has become because you love the racism or you love the anti-trans environment or whatever it is about it that you love, and this just feels like a threat to your playground. It feels like a threat to your ground zero. Anything that compromises Elon Musk's overarching power to provide you with this extraordinary echo chamber must be resisted. Even anti-paedophile legislation.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, President Trump is expected to meet with his top advisers later to discuss the response to Iran's crackdown on demonstrations. More than 600 people have reportedly been killed in anti-regime protests over the last few weeks. The White House says the option of military action remains on the table. Former Pentagon Middle East advisor Jasmine El-Gamal says it's not just about toppling the supreme leader.
It's not just about the Ayatollah Khamenei at the top. It's about an entire security architecture. It's about security forces, the military, loyalists, elite supporters. All of that has to crumble in order for the entire regime to be ousted.
Around 25,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex still have no water for a fourth consecutive day. South East water supply issues started on Saturday with the company blaming bad weather. Helen is a single mum living in Tunbridge Wells and has told LBC the outage is causing major issues.
Now I've got to juggle children with being at home and working. Nurseries are closing. And the other problem is even if they open, you never know if they'll close during the day because the water runs out.
South East Water has apologised and says some customers could see their water return later. The Liberal Democrats are promising people in England the right to be seen within 12 hours in A&E if they come to power. The £1.5 billion plan would make around 6,000 extra beds available every day by expanding hospital capacity. The party says that they'd fund it by scrapping the pharmaceuticals deal with the US. Speaking at an event in London, the party leader, Sir Ed Davey, accused Labour of failing to fix corridor care.
This deadly corridor crisis isn't befitting of the heroic doctors, nurses and other health professionals who work in our NHS. It's not what we expect from our NHS, and it's not what we pay our hard-earned money in taxes to fund our NHS for.
The government says it is working with NHS trusts to end corridor care.
The Scottish Government will deliver its final budget ahead of May's Holyrood elections later. The Finance Secretary Shona Robison will set out her tax and spending plans. Manchester United are expected to announce Michael Carrick as their interim head coach. The club's former midfielder previously took charge in a caretaker role in 2021. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 10,141. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for large parts of the UK through Tuesday. Northern Ireland will see the best of any sunny spells, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm staying in the realms of the internet now. I think the days, you know, I've been doing this job so long, I probably would have apologised for that once because of all the people who don't know about it or don't aren't on it. I've told you a few times, haven't I, that when I started on national newspapers, there was no internet. This is almost impossible to process. What's the biggest thing that you point out to young people that they can't quite believe to be true? Music is an incredible indicator of how fast and how far the world has turned in the course of my lifetime. And my daughters can listen to pretty much anything they want, whenever they want. And we had to, and not doing one of those things, oh, wasn't it nice when we all drank out of hose pipes and lived on Spangles Facebook posts. I think this is significant. Because it demonstrates ease of access to something. We have lost the ability to want. I heard a line over the Christmas holidays that I said, I must share that with you. And then inevitably I forgot it. But it was something like, we've lost that sense of craving something. Because we can have it delivered by tea time. Do you remember the run-up to a special occasion? Listen, I know not everybody can afford everything, but that's not actually the point, because if you had the money, you could have it now. You wouldn't have to wait until it was in stock, or until it was your birthday, or until you'd saved up enough, because you can do it on credit. Much of my childhood, it seems to me, was defined by waiting and wanting. And you know, we were privileged kids, my sister and I, but you always wanted, I wanted Crossfire. Do you remember that game? Or you wanted Sabutio, or you wanted a bicycle. You're just waiting and wanting. And as adults, life would not have been that different. The combination of door-to-door deliveries, internet and credit, cheap credit, has created a world where we can have whatever we want whenever we want it, regardless of whether we can afford it or not. I wish I could remember the line. If it's ringing any bells for you and you were listening to or watching whatever it was that I was listening to or watching when I heard that line, maybe it was just that simple line about we've lost the ability to want things, to want and wait. It was pithier than that. It was definitely pithier than that. 7 minutes after 11 is the time. And that's why the next conversation, although it stays in the realms of the internet, is going to be completely different. The likelihood is, and I told you to keep a very, very close eye on what was happening in Australia with regards to a ban on social media for under-16s. It's still a little early to reach any lasting permanent conclusions, final conclusions, but Meta has closed more than 500,000 Instagram and Facebook accounts in Australia since the ban was introduced last month. That's last month. Instagram taking by far the biggest proportion of that hit. Doesn't like the government's, quotes, inconsistent, end quotes, verification methods and the aim of the law, but, I mean, that would suggest that it is working. at scale. And therefore, perhaps inevitably, the UK is minded to move in a similar direction. Peter Kyle contends the business secretary that it is not the right way to go, but Wes Streeting yesterday voiced particular interest in the idea. And it's this line here that Wes Streeting used, the impact social media is having on the health and well-being of children and young people, let alone their concentration and their learning. The reason that I have decided to do this today, in the same breath as the conversation we had in the last hour, is because I want it to be completely different. So the sort of stuff that we were discussing in the last hour is obviously gross, even with the Elon Musk fans pretending not to understand that or indeed believe that. Everybody knows it's gross. It used to be confined to the darkest corners of the internet, and the grossness of it hinges upon the non-consensual nature of what is being done to people via their images. So there's no real mystery there, or at least not much of a mystery. But when you talk about the psychological damage that is done to young people by access to social media, you still, I think, need a key. You still need a little bit of a map. Because the reason I was wanging on a minute ago, it's a miracle I didn't start extolling the beauties of Woolworths, wasn't it? But the reason I was wanging on a minute ago about what has happened in the context of wanting and waiting is because it must have affected quite a deep psychological change in us. Imagine explaining to a 14-year-old that you could only watch a film if it was on television that day. I mean, even before Blockbuster, before VHS video shots, oh, what's your favourite film? Wizard of Oz. When are you going to watch it? Next Christmas, hopefully, if it's on. I'll buy the Radio Times at the end of November and go through it to find out when the Wizard of Oz is on. That was my life. Well, not my whole life, but that is a memory from my childhood. That's my favourite film. I love that film. I really want to watch it again. I'm going to have to wait to see if it's on at Christmas. That's just almost inconceivable to somebody who is a teenager now. That's just one tiny little example. Do you like a band? Do you like a band? Would you like to listen to their music? Yeah, you'll have to save up and buy an album. It'll cost you about a month's pocket money. And even then, you'll only get one album. And there's a very realistic chance that if you buy it on cassette, it'll get chewed up and ruined. Or the LP will get scratched and you can't just replace it. It's a physical... I mean, it's my birthday today, so perhaps I'm feeling my age a little bit more than I usually do. But if you think about the changes it's made to our life, and it's just... it's not crept up on us. It's as if we've gone from 0 to 100 miles an hour in the course of 20 years. And we're grown-ups, allegedly. We're adults. So... let's try today. We've done it before, but perhaps not with this reminder to be calm. I don't want you to describe nightmares to me. I don't want you to describe obvious horror shows to me. I don't want to hear about children in this hour. We talked about it in the last hour. Children being groomed online. I want to talk about the damage being done by the stuff we thought was okay. Right? I have been unspeakably lucky in this field now. Both of my girls are now in their late teens. And to the very best of my knowledge, and I'm very lucky to have brilliant relationships with both of them, that they've been okay. That they haven't fallen under the spell of Instagram or TikTok. In fact, one of those, I don't think they have either of those. They definitely don't have one of them on there. Phones and they flirted with it, you know. They've seen it. Snapchat's a big one as well. I think that counts as social media. We've just been really lucky. I don't think we did much. Mrs. O'Brien probably was more on the ball than I was, but it's not a guarantee that a child is going to be damaged or even end up in thrall to this technology. But it is now likely enough to happen that governments are stopping the access. Liz Kendall is understood to be open-minded about a possible restriction. Everybody will be watching Australia. I'm not expecting one of my Cassandra, the pitiful profit prizes for this one. It was pretty obvious that everybody was going to be watching Australia very, very closely to see what happens with regard to this social media ban for all under-16s that came into force just before Christmas. The reporting, and it's by the policy editor of the iNewspaper, who is a brilliant journalist, Jane Merrick, her information is that the decision is likely to be taken within months rather than years. Civil servants are already drawing research up on how the ban is working in Australia, and as we mentioned a moment ago, Wes Streeting has commissioned the Department of Health for advice on the evidence used in Australia to justify such a ban. And that is what I want you to talk to me about. Kemi Badenoch as well, to be fair, has called for this as well, although she spent much of yesterday saying very strange things about orange squash that I didn't fully understand, although I'm sure that's my problem, not hers. We're talking about not obvious, we're not talking about crimes. That's probably the easiest way to describe it. We're not talking about social media being used to commit or facilitate or accelerate criminality. So it's not about being groomed or exploited or sold drugs or knives or anything like that. It's about the stuff we didn't realise was dangerous when it started. Because they knew. You watch that film, is it The Social Dilemma? Where all of the tech bros were queuing up to tell the camera that they wouldn't let their own children use the technology that their fortunes was built on. I wouldn't let my own children use it. But we didn't know. Ordinary Joes and Joannas like us didn't know what the dangers were. And obviously there's two questions here. But the first one I want to pin down with your help is, and ideally, I suppose, from personal experience, either now because you've come out the other side of it, so you'd be in your 20s, early 30s perhaps, and you can look back and say that social media, when you were 13, 14, 15, was a dangerous and devilish thing, and absolutely the next generation of young people should be freed from it. Isn't language fascinating? You sort of banned it. Should be freed from it. We're freeing children from the tyranny of social media, as opposed to we're banning children from accessing social media. It's the same story. You can just set it up in two completely different ways. I just want the evidence that the government is going to be driven by, but on your level, from your life, okay? 0345 6060973. What is it that social media does that is so bad, particularly for young minds? What is it? Because this isn't like falling down a racist rabbit hole on Twitter. This is relatively normal stuff we didn't realize was bad. Maybe you did, but stuff society didn't realize was dangerous or damaging when it started. It was just a glorified telephone. It was just a way of keeping in touch with people, making friends. It was MySpace, Friends Reunited. You remember all those early day social media platforms? Nobody was warning then about mental health crises or an epidemic of anxiety or about a lost generation. Nobody was warning about that when Lily Allen was posting her stuff on MySpace and you were signing up to Friends Reunited to see what had happened to that boy you fancied in school. And yet somewhere in that, was it 20-year window? It's not a century. It's not half a century. It's a 20-year window. It's all the years that we've been together, you and me, doing this every morning. In that window, in that space, it's gone from being cute and sweet and funny to being something that damages young people so profoundly that a consensus, a coalition of politicians who can't agree about anything seem to agree that they should ban this. So for a kind of, not a sceptic exactly, but for an ignorant, now ignoramus sounds rude, for someone who doesn't get it, for whatever reason, for me in a way, because my children have not happily fallen under this particular spell, and until Musk bought Twitter, I found social media a largely pleasant and pleasurable experience. What is it that it does to young minds that makes so many people so persuaded that it needs to be shut down? Get into it for me if you can, okay? 0345 6060973. And don't worry if you think your contribution is obvious. The more we can get on the board, the more interesting the conversation will be. What is the, for you, the thing that comes into your mind? We're gonna take social media access away from under 16s. And you say, I mean, look, you can argue with it. You can say it's a very bad idea, but I want to know for the generation that still kind of think it's fun and or fine, what does it do to young people that is so concerning and so, bad, actually? I don't need a fancy word. Put it into your own words now. 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 19 minutes after 11, and it is also a question that we could have asked at any point in the last few years, but not with the backdrop of a very real prospect of a very real ban. You sometimes think it doesn't make any difference who's in charge. Politicians all nibble at the same sort of, I know you said nuts then, I should probably say cherries. They all nibble at the same cherries. You get some fairly profound moments of change like Brexit, but it's often hard to see the evidence of government in your day-to-day life. You see a slow decline, but you can't often point at something and go, God, that's brilliant. And that only happened because of political leadership. It does exist, don't get me wrong. But I was really impressed when it was reported that the Australian government was going to ban under-16s from social media. Not because I necessarily thought it was the right thing to do, but just because I just thought it was strong leadership. It's kind of what you want governments to do. The world feels like a scary, dangerous and declining place at the moment, and you want a government to do something that it genuinely believes will make things better. If they turn out to have been wrong about it, then they will still have the comfort of knowing that they were motivated by a desire to make things better. And this felt big. Under-16s, all over social media, hardly ever off it, would be banned from it because it's doing them so much harm. But it works only if we can identify and understand exactly what that harm is. And that's where I want your help. And all answers count. Thinking chiefly about mental health, anxiety, and other, what you might loosely describe as invisible conditions, and the question of why unfettered access to these platforms creates so many problems. 0345 6060973. Tom's in Ealing. Tom, what can you tell us?
Yeah, I sort of wanted to take this from an angle of someone who grew up with social media.
Yes.
I was kind of in that age where it felt quite new and everyone was kind of excited to do it and there wasn't really any gauge on what it could do to you. So,
and there weren't any warnings either, were there? I mean, nobody really... Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but no one was really conscious of potential peril at the beginning.
No, not at all. It really did feel like something that it was like, here it is, it's cool, it's interesting, and everyone was on it. From my experience, my parents were quite apprehensive about it and we weren't actually allowed to use it. And with that, there was an extreme pressure to be on it. People were very judgmental of you not being there. And so you're more encouraged to be on it. That, you know, looking back now, that's quite forward thinking. But at the time, it was more from a kind of a paranoid aspect. We felt that we sort of knew better.
Okay.
And I see with a lot of people now, a lot of people who grew up with it are parents themselves now. And so they feel that it's a quite normalized thing. And I think that being sort of fearful of it is definitely a younger person's thing. They're becoming more...
I wonder, that's a really good point. I've got a couple of phone lines free. So someone who has got a child hitting sort of 12, 13, who spent a lot of time on social media when they were the same age. The age is just about work. It's a feasible thing, isn't it? Just a simple question of whether you're in favour of or opposed to the ban on under-16s and why. Because it's quite easy to muster up a resistance to the proposal. YouTube, for example, can be a great force for good. I don't like the conflation of screen time with social media because, you know, screen time, you could be watching Fellini films or Citizen Kane. It's not necessarily per se a bad thing. But social media does something to young minds that we are supposed to want to stop. What is it that it does, Tom?
It does not give them the time to adapt to the real world. They're constantly fed ways of how to think and their thought process are compartmentalized massively.
Wow.
We're very lucky that we were allowed to live in a world where we could express ourselves outside of a way that's already telling you this is the way you need to think. And at the same time, there's so many other people saying the way you're thinking is wrong. There's no way to sort of really find yourself mentally.
So it plays a role in the so-called NEETs. I'm not a massive fan of that description, but the young people who are not in education, employment or training. When you said that thing then about it doesn't equip you or it even robs you of the ability to be equipped for the real world, mm-hmm. It would probably help explain why that figure is close to 1 million young people now, perhaps.
Definitely, yeah. And on top of that, you're being constantly encouraged to engage with it. If you are, you know, out of employment, you are going to spend more time, and then you're constantly seeing people who are professing incredible lives that were so easy to achieve, and it doesn't really give you that chance to, you know, find confidence in yourself because you're constantly being put down.
Can you put that into words? I mean, I know what the words you've used mean, but yeah. This is the massive problem for my generation with the what I consider to be a national tragedy of young people who just can't quite engage with the world. Can you put it into words other than simply saying, you might not be able to, this isn't a criticism or a gotcha, but
no.
What does that mean for someone who never, you know, for me it was a conveyor belt, Tom. I mean, life just went school, university, work. There was no room there to not be ready for the next stage. What does it mean when you're not ready? But largely because you've spent your life online and you've made so many of your human connections in an artificial frame. What does it mean that you're not ready for real life?
I think through life experiences outside of social media, you are given room to make mistakes and to be young and learn through human interaction. But so much of that is sped up immensely and also, you know, projected towards you in a disingenuous way of people who, you know, perhaps are young and very successful, but they are not
realistic. And then your self-esteem plummets because you're comparing yourself to them. That's an absolutely brilliant opener. Thank you. And you've also left a lot of gaps for other people, hopefully, to fill, other callers to fill. I'll try and fill some of them myself. But that, I mean, we're looking almost for that thing that will make people go, oh, flipping heck. Oh, blimey. It's, if it was you, what would you do? This is part of Stanislavski's theatrical training I have discovered recently. But it's what he did. But when he was trying to become a better actor, is he rather than imagining what it would feel like to be a 15-year-old on Snapchat, what you do is get given a scenario. This is what I am. I'm 15. I'm on Snapchat. Everybody's calling me names. What would I do? And then you imagine what you would do, and you get the feeling of what it would be like. I hope I've represented Stanislavski correctly there. And that's what you can't get until you've done the work. So, you know, someone in their 50s or their 40s can't quite imagine what they would do. Or they don't know what it would feel like unless they imagine themselves doing it, and they can't quite do it themselves. So my experiences are pretty worthless here, because social media for me has always been such a big platform. You know, you've got millions or thousands of people interested in what you're doing on there. Then the negativity is going to feel very different from how it would for a normal person with a small following. But maybe everybody in school or 10 people in your class Well, I don't know. You see what I mean, though, about how you explain it to somebody who hasn't got the framework of experience to understand the impact? Because if it is relevant to the 1 million young people not in education, employment or training, then it matters to every single one of us. Tom, thank you. Gemma is in Tower Hamlets. Gemma, what would you like to say?
Hiya. Hello. I'm speaking from the point of view as a young girl who downloaded social media when I was about 14.
Right.
Because all my other friends had.
Yes.
And I think it's quite common to, at that age, not be particularly confident, not have built your own identity. And I think that's an age-old thing. Yes. To figure out during your teens. But being in that position, you're extremely vulnerable to being moulded, and you would be in life through, I don't know, general media, but you have this thing in your pocket.
Yeah.
And it feeds you whatever will keep you coming back to it, and whatever makes it money. And women have always been sold things. Problems have been created for them, and then solutions have been sold to them. That's not new either. But the fact that the world has gotten more and more distressing and harder for young people, and the ease of being able to take that away, that being at young people's fingertips and that being in their pockets, which means that they're turning to it much more readily and they're staying on it for longer. And even in that, I don't know, safe space that they think they're entering, you're being drawn into it, into something. Your prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until you're 21 or even 25, is what they're saying now.
That's right.
So how can you know what's good for you, know whether you're being influenced and understand these things?
And if the stuff that saps your self-esteem and undermines your confidence is the stuff that you find hardest to turn away from, because that can be the nature of addictive behaviour, then you're doomed, because that is the stuff that your algorithm is going to be serving up again and again and again, and constantly and endlessly. So the relationship between social media, and we use words like anxiety or mental health, but I like the word confidence in this, or self-esteem in this space. And that's something that the older generation can get their head around. You spend hours a day on something that makes you feel bad about yourself. Of course it's going to have an impact.
Yeah, I think that older people, maybe once you're, I don't know, 25, 30, and you've got an idea of who you
ancient
are.
Ancient Gemma.
You've got an idea of who you are as a person. And if certain things are offered to you, or you enter these opportunities, you know enough about yourself and who you are as a person to make decisions that are informed by your own values. But if you're a 14-year-old trying to fit in, and I don't know, it's not just a girl thing either.
No, of course.
If you don't have that experience or confidence, I think that is a good word, then you will do whatever, you'll move in the direction that you're pushed.
And you're going to be more daunted by the outside world. I'm bringing the NEET statistic into this conversation because I'm enduringly fascinated and heartbroken by the nearly 1 million young people who are just not yet properly engaging with society. But it's a lot easier to understand through the lens that you've described.
Yeah, I just had one last thing to say, is that I'm now, you know, I'm in therapy, and I've done a lot of work on myself, and I'm a lot more aware of these things.
Yes.
And I do have social media because I use it for my own work.
Yes.
And to engage creatively. But I'm very strict with what comes up on my feed. And there's the not interested feature on apps like TikTok,
yeah,
where if something comes up, I click not interested. So it doesn't show me things with that hashtag or in that area. And I'm very strict because I don't want it to turn, my For You page to turn into that kind of space again.
Yeah.
But even with the, like, rigor that I police it, it will keep sending me back because it's profiled me as a young teenage girl. It will still every couple of months keep sending me into weight loss or
right,
selling me products about my skin, even though I've never searched for anything, never sure shown any
it's
interest got, in that.
You've filled so in adamant some virtual boxes that have told the algorithm that's the kind of stuff you will be susceptible to.
Yeah, and my point is you can actually be confident and aware of these things, and it is such a strong force that you have to be, I don't know, it is, you can do all the right things and it will still keep trying to put you down.
Do you know that Kevin's been in touch while you were talking, and I wish I'd thought of this. The last minute of this conversation sounds an awful lot like you're describing an abusive relationship. Your caller is incredibly clear. What an excellent contribution. And that's exactly what I was... I hadn't articulated that thought. I was groping or grasping for the feeling you were creating inside me. It sounds like someone describing an abusive relationship to me.
Hmm.
You don't buy that?
I haven't thought about it like that.
No. Right, so there you go. We've both got something to think about now. Gemma, thank you. I agree with Kevin about the clarity and the excellence of your contribution. I mean, I've had friends who've been in abusive relationships that you don't know about if you're on the outside, and it's always about eroding self-esteem to the point where you become broken almost, being told constantly that you're fat or you're ugly or nobody would want you. That's not happening explicitly, but it's happening implicitly, being told you need weight, you need to lose weight, you need to buy this, you need... I don't know. I'm just trying to... Some old geezer trying to work it out. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Dominic Ellis is here with your headlines.
Around 25,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex still have no water for a fourth consecutive day. South East water supply issues started on Saturday with the company blaming bad weather. President Trump's expected to meet with his top advisers later to discuss the response to Iran's crackdown on demonstrations. More than 600 people have been reportedly killed in anti-regime protests over the last few weeks. And the Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey, has been setting out his party's plan to end 12-hour A&E waits in England if they come to power. The £1.5 billion proposal would make around 6,000 extra beds available every day by expanding hospital capacity. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for large parts of the UK through today. Northern Ireland will see the best of any sunshine, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are...
the nation's most trusted vets.
We think that's because they're...
locally owned.
And locally loved.
Wherever you are.
We've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw, so you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man, so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw, so...
let's go, Kev! Goat cheese bagel for lunch! Woohoo!
This could get tiresome.
Is it your lucky day? Search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:37 is the time. It's gone from Saturday morning TV to Saturday night out in front of a proper rough pub, says Andrew on the question of social media. I don't know how helpful that was. There'll be plenty of young people listening going, what's he on about? But then I'll find things that you find resonant and that your parents would think were completely incomprehensible. MySpace. I was talking about MySpace. Was it Granada that paid a fortune for Friends Reunited? I've got in my head like it can't have been £500 million. It's probably £50 million. And then almost overnight, it just, Facebook must have gone bonkers, because almost overnight it went from being the only social media platform in town to being entirely irrelevant and redundant, and someone had just paid a huge sum of cash for it. But that's a really helpful illustration for me to map the acceleration of technology. So if you were to do it on a different level, you'd go from the days when we had to record our favourite pop songs off the charts on Sunday evenings and desperately try and hit the buttons at the right moment so you could cut out whoever's voice it was, Gary Davis, his voice, right through to now, where your children can listen to any song they want from any band, from any point in history, whenever they please. And even watch it, of course, performed live. You know, live footage of a live performance, or videos. It's bonkers, but it's happened incrementally, and we haven't mapped the bonkersness of it. So in the world of social media, how many people of my age or thereabouts still think of it in rather rosy tones or rosy terms? And they say, well, it's doing enormous damage to young people. We go, is it really? What why? And that's the question we're answering, because it is. And we don't fully understand why, although Gemma and Tom and other people contributing are helping. 11:39 is the time. It's as if we've got that kind of, it's not a disconnect, it's just a little blockage. It's an obstacle that we need to get over, because we're talking about things we have never experienced. So for the slightly older generation, especially if they haven't had any really negative experiences on social media, you can't quite get your head around the damage it would do to a young person. So what you do is this. You imagine being borderline addicted to something that was constantly making you feel inadequate, that was constantly making you feel unsuccessful. You can't sell much to happy people. I don't know if anyone cleverer than me has ever said that, but you can't sell much to happy people. I can't be the first person that's ever said that. If I am, I'm going to stick it on a T-shirt. You can't sell much to happy people, and social media is about selling stuff. Time is the commodity that they sell. They sell your time to people who will then seek to sell you actual stuff. But the social media platforms are selling the amount of time that you spend on there to their advertisers. And you can't quite imagine what it would be like to be, unless you've been through it, to be constantly told, you're ugly, you're fat, you can fix this. You're ugly, you're fat, you can fix this. You can fix this. You have a problem, you can fix this. And adults are exposed to similar engines, but as Gemma explained, we're exposed to them, or we are, have been exposed to them at a time when we've already got a fairly clear idea of who we are. Not all of us, of course, but generally speaking, the younger you are, the more plastic you are, the more malleable you are, the more impressionable you are. And what if the loudest voices in your life are telling you you're rubbish all the time? All the time. Not like the olden days when it was just idiots on the radio like me or newspaper columnists, but it's in your pocket, it's intimate, it's permanent. So ban them. Don't let children on these platforms until they're 16. Yes or no? Kerry's in real. Kerry, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. I'm 35. So
perfect age.
Social media,
yes.
15, 16, we're roughly that age. I've now got a 12-year-old boy.
Right.
For me, I've always been on my little corner of social media. I've never really seen anything too bad.
Yeah.
Anything that's really affected me. My thing is, people my age and older, what I'm finding is they're so unhappy because they're comparing themselves. These are people that are in their 30s and 40s that are looking at someone who's got a new car, someone who's got a new job, someone who's got a new house, someone who's just had their teeth done. It's just a massive...
Sorry.
Just, everyone's just comparing.
All the time.
And all the time. I don't want my child to feel inadequate, to feel unconfident, to feel weak. These adults that are feeling that way, why on earth would I expose my child to that?
That's it, isn't it? And I mean, no one is talking about banning it for adults any more than they're talking about banning advertising. Mm-hmm. But you, in a sense, you only have yourself to blame. You can, as an adult, you should have the wherewithal to look away, to turn it off. I know it's easier said than done, but for a child, no one's going to argue, because if you were arguing that, you'd be describing them as adults. It's our job to protect them. I don't know whose job it is to protect their parents, but it's our job to protect them.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I mean, Twitter, X, whatever it is, it's an absolute cesspit. It's a horrible app to be on. I would never allow my child to be anywhere near that.
But what about the other stuff? Because it is all or nothing, really. You can't nibble at the edges of it. So YouTube has good things on it, but they wouldn't be allowed access to that. That you've had positive experiences. Your child wouldn't be able to... explore stuff, make friends, find people with the same hobby as him. There's lots of positives there that we'd be taking off the table as well.
Absolutely, I agree with that. But if it's a blanket ban to all under 16s, they don't have a choice. They've got to speak to each other face to face. They can call each other on the phone. You know, when I was 15, 16, thinking back,
yeah,
it wasn't a big thing. We weren't bothered by it. We'd get off free phone calls after 6 o'clock at night and we'd ring each other. But, you know...
Of course.
It was never let's go on.
You could close your door. It's difficult for me because I went to boarding school. So that image of closing the front door at the end of the day and you really were home and safe. I never really had that growing up, but everybody else did. You were not contactable easily. They couldn't come after you when you were at home. What do you think protected you from what you see so many of your friends suffering from now? Just like, it could be luck, you might not know. How come you haven't fallen down that?
I think good parenting from my parents that were always honest and open and had them conversations with me. And I'm that way with my son. He's very law-abiding, if you like. Yeah. If I say no, he'll never go against that. He'll always tell me where he is.
What is he, 12?
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed. You don't want to tempt fate on that.
He'll always give me his phone. If I ask for it, he'll give me his phone. He's not bothered by things like that. But I know that pressure, because he's just started high school.
There it is, then.
That pressure from his friends is going to start. Can I download? And
you take away the option. You take away the option and just say, no, you're not allowed to. Nobody is. And they say, well, Johnny's got it. And you say, well, Johnny's parents are breaking the law. And I'm not going to do it. And he'd get that. I always used to look at 12-year-olds through the lens of my own life and think that they were all incredibly naughty little boys waiting to get into trouble. But they're not, actually. it makes sense, doesn't it? You're not allowed to do that. You can see that's a wonderful way into it, isn't it? You can see the damage that it does to adults and ask yourself why on earth you would be allowing your children unfettered access to this potential poison. And that's the other part of the problem, because if you thought of it as a physical thing, a pill, for example, two people could take the same pill. One would be absolutely fine and one would be depressed. One would be suffering from anxiety for years to come. The same pill, or access to the same pill, even take the same pill in that moment of engagement. It's crazy. 11:45 is the time. Oh, hang on. Missed information. A rather good missed information after this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A visit by a Jewish MP to a school in his constituency was cancelled after a campaign by pro-Palestinian teachers and threats from parents to keep their children at home. We speak of Damien Egan, the Labour MP for Bristol North East, due to visit Bristol Brunel Academy. Emily in Manchester, let's get you on.
It can be kind of construed as whether he's not been allowed to school because of his religion, which I think is obviously completely, unacceptable.
Katie's in Watford.
The fact that as a Jew, he's prohibited from going there because presumably he believes Israel has the right to exist is absolutely scandalous.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Live and love to the last breath. This January, fall in love with the passion, drama, and heartbreak of the iconic opera that inspired Pretty Woman and Moulin Rouge. Experience the Royal Opera's grand production of La Traviata from the 8th of January to the 17th of February at the Royal Opera House. Get great seats from just £23. Don't miss La Traviata. Book now at rbo.org.uk.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 11:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Is this the first of 2026? I think it is. Speaking of firsts, we have a submission for Unhinged Headline, which I think for the first time since the invention of that feature comes from the Guardian newspaper. And it is incredibly unhinged, but not in the way that the unhinged headlines that we read out from the Daily Telegraph are unhinged. It's a different sort of unhingedness. And I may share that with you shortly. But first, I am sharing this.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. Simon Evans is the deputy editor and senior policy editor at Carbon Brief, a UK-based website covering the latest developments in climate science, climate policy and energy policy. And he joins me now because of an extraordinary headline in the Mail at the weekend, which contained the figure that Ed Miliband's net zero drive would finally cost. And that figure was, you might want to sit down for this, £4.5 trillion. I'll do that again. £4.5 trillion. Simon is here to fill in some of the gaps in that information. Simon, what information are we missing here?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to explain because it's staggeringly idiotic the way that they've come to this headline. So effectively what they've done is they've said, what is the cost of installing, building, owning, operating the UK's energy system in each year? So yeah, that's everything from buying a car, buying a boiler, buying a gas-fired power station, buying a wind farm, all of those things, all of the things that make and use energy in this country. And also...
So if we did it all in one go, on one day, we replaced every single energy-related institution, project, product, right on that minute, on that note. And that's that. Okay, well, this is fun.
And then what you have to say, and so then you add that, you add up that cost, and the National Energy System Operator did this, and they said over 25 years, the investment, the capital cost of all of that equipment, if we were to get to net zero, would be £4.5 trillion.
Yes.
But what the headline is missing is that the alternative isn't free. So in order for £4.5 trillion to be the cost of going net zero instead of something else, the something else has to be completely free. So we have to be able to get free gas.
Because
free
otherwise
petrol,
it would be...
Free cars.
Carrying on as we are would cost £3.5 trillion. Therefore the final total... Or it would cost £4.8 trillion. Or it would cost £4.2 trillion. So the figure is entirely meaningless.
Exactly, yeah. It makes absolutely no sense at all to compare the cost of having an energy system that happens to be net zero for 25 years, of installing it, running it, you know, all of the things that we need to do, and then comparing that to absolutely nothing, you know, comparing that to a world, a fantasy world in which we get free electricity and free
This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring it down to the individual consumer. Is that the £4.5 trillion contains all of their electricity bills. It contains what they spend on their car. So for that figure to be meaningful, their next car would be free, and all of the electricity that they use for the rest of their lives would cost them nothing.
Yeah, so the £4.5 trillion is just the capital cost, just the cost to buy the stuff, you know, the power plant, the cars, the boilers. If you want to know the cost of running it as well, so the cost, the staff that you need at power stations, you know, your annual service charge for your gas boiler when you get it checked, if you add all of that in as well, then you get to £7.6 trillion. And that figure has also been in the papers in the last couple of days. And then if you want to go even crazier, even one better than that, what you can do, and again, this was in the papers today, it was in a Sun editorial, it was in the Daily Express, is you can say that the cost of net zero is $9 trillion, which is double the £4.5 trillion that you said in a fun voice earlier. And the way that you do that is that you add up, you know, the cost of building and operating your net zero energy system. And then on top of that, you add the cost of climate damages. So, you know, the economic damage that's caused by CO2 that we put into the atmosphere. And you pretend, again, that there would be no climate damages if we didn't go for the net zero. If we carried on burning oil and gas, then magically those climate damages wouldn't exist.
So pretend is an interesting word. And it preempts the question I was going to ask you next. In the rationale behind the Quango doing this is sound, right? Is it? I mean, it makes some sense to have done the calculation that they have done. And then it's the journalists that abuse it, or have you got a problem with the original calculation?
So what the National Energy System Operator, the Quango you mentioned, what they did was they added up all of the costs of building, operating, etc., the energy system, and then they compared a different world in which we carry on using fossil fuels, and then they worked out the difference, and that's what you should focus on. That's the important number. And they found that over 25 years, a net zero energy system would cost something like $360 billion more than a fossil fuel system, assuming that we don't care about climate change, and assuming that climate damages don't cost us anything, that floods don't matter, you know, increasing heat waves and so on.
So none of the costs that are incurred by not making the changes are included in the calculation. Yeah.
Then they concluded that if you cared about climate change, if you valued the damages caused by greenhouse gas emissions, then actually going for net zero was the cheapest option for the UK. They published that in the autumn, and what's happened now is that some political operatives, some think tanks have got hold of the numbers, and they've just added them up to get the highest possible value, the scariest sounding number they can possibly find, even if it makes no sense whatsoever.
So
they've persuaded a bunch of journalists to publish without any question.
There it is. And those think tanks presumably are either philosophically or geographically in the environs of London's infamous Tufton Street.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting. It's often the way with misinformation. So to conclude, the NESO, and you provide links on your Blue Sky page to all of the relevant documents so that people can dig into this for themselves, conclude that it going net zero would be a net saving for the economy, for the country. But if you completely ignore 50% of the calculations that they've done, you could pretend that it's going to cost £450 billion.
4.5 trillion pounds. I should say I actually haven't checked the figures, but I'm pretty sure that's multiples of the size of the UK economy. So, you know, if you were a journalist, you were writing up that number, you might have...
Just stop and think, hang on a minute, that can't be right. It's been Mike Myers sitting there with his little finger in his mouth. It's ridiculous, isn't it? You go, hang on a minute, I've just written an article that they're going to put £4.5 trillion in the headline. How feasible is that? And no one did that. Yeah. None of the people who've put their names to these articles have simply asked themselves, hang on a minute, maybe I should check my sources.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speculate too much about the state of mind of the journalists involved, but you can imagine that, you know, perhaps this just fit with what they expected. Perhaps it was a headline that they were quite keen to publish for whatever reason. I don't know.
Yes, perish the thought. Thank you. Really good stuff, actually, Simon. To my embarrassment, I'm not sure I was following you previously on Blue Sky, but I certainly am now. Simon is a deputy editor and senior policy editor at Carbon Brief. I will share the opening post of that thread so that you can have a look at it for yourself. And remember, I wrote in my last book about how the bloke who founded one of those think tanks, in his own autobiography, explained how they end up signing journalists up to spouting their propaganda, which is almost certainly funded by fossil fuel companies, although, of course, many of these organisations refuse to disclose where their funding is coming from. I think it's fair to say that my mission against this pollutant in public discourse in this country is not yet fully successful. It's 11:58. Should we squeeze in one call on the question of social media? We'll definitely be returning to it. That was a good way into it. And I think Gemma's comparison to Kevin's comparison of Gemma's description of what social media does to young minds to a coercive or an abusive relationship is one that we will all be taking away. Greg is in Colchester. Greg, you haven't got long, but make it matter.
Yeah, okay. There's always a better party next door, isn't there? That's the problem. And that's where the teenagers get roped into feeling bad about themselves. But the other point I want to quickly make...
I like that analogy.
The other point I want to quickly make is what concerns me, it misguides young people's career paths. And that is very detrimental to their prospects. You get young boys especially, they'll say, oh, look at this bloke, he's got a brand new BMW, he's only 19 because he does this, that and the other. And it's all nonsense. You know, and it's not teaching people that life is tough and you've got to work and do what you've got to do. You've got to go to university.
And then, because it's easy to sound unkind when you say that. I know you don't intend to, but what we're doing is understanding how these young people end up in that situation.
But they're getting sucked in. An easy route.
And when they can't get it, they think they've failed. They think there's something wrong with them. That's the point of empathy and sympathy. Great stuff, Greg. You did indeed make it matter. Last word on this goes to someone who's asked me not to share their name for reasons that will become relatively clear. This caller, again, I think we're going back to Gemma in Tower Hamlets, is describing... It was Kerry in Rill, 35-year-old mother of the 12-year-old. This caller is describing my girlfriend. She has often had bouts of depression, and when she finally talks, she always says the same thing. Everyone else has more. She's upset that people have bigger houses. She's upset that people have better cars. She's upset that people are healthier. I will add to that. She's upset that people are better looking. She's upset that people are slimmer. She's upset that people have got whiter teeth and bigger lips. And that's what social media does to a grown-up. What is it going to do to a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old? And we haven't really done the boys' equivalent, so we can save that for another day.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, around 25,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex still have no water for a fourth day in a row. Supply issues started on Saturday with the impact of Storm Goretti being blamed for the disruption. The government says the situation is completely unacceptable. Justine Lewis, who lives in Tunbridge Wells, is among those impacted.
The pressure keeps dropping, the water's come through brown, a bit sludgy on occasions. Yesterday we had absolutely no water at all. I've got four children, we've got a household of six. I don't know how the elderly are coping with this in the slightest.
South East Water have apologised and say supplies have been restored in some areas and work is ongoing in others. An Iranian official says around 2,000 people, including security personnel, have now been killed in protests in the country. It's the first time Tehran has provided any kind of figure since unrest began 2 weeks ago. Previous estimates in the hundreds have been provided by human rights groups. The Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey, has set out his party's promise to end 12-hour A&E waits in England if they come to power. The £1.5 billion plan would make 6,000 extra beds available by expanding hospital capacity. The party says they'd fund it by scrapping the government's pharmaceuticals deal with the United States. Speaking to LBC at an event in London, Sir Ed explained how it would work.
The way the deal would work is that the prices that the NHS pay for drugs, the price tariff, would be increased to give American pharmaceutical giants more money. We just don't do that. Now, obviously, there might be a reaction from the White House. Bring it on. One thing I've been saying for some time now is the only way you stand up to Trump is by showing you have alternatives.
A watchdog has warned the government is on track to miss its key nature targets by 2030. They include halting declines in species and ensuring 30% of land and sea is protected for nature. Ministers say they'll carefully consider the assessment. And Manchester United are expected to announce Michael Carrick as interim head coach later. It's understood the former United midfielder has reached a verbal agreement with the club. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for large parts of the UK, the best of any sunshine for Northern Ireland, with highs today of 12 degrees. A short time ago in the city, the FTSE 100 was trading down 6 at 10,136. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled my name in tea lights. And my mum hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is a really interesting story, and it's interesting for a variety of reasons, but one of which is, I don't know if dispiriting is quite the right word. The prevalence of ADHD diagnoses is of enormous interest to me because I think from a social point of view, we are realizing we're moving into an era where behavioral issues, or what we would describe quite loosely as naughtiness, is no longer going to be seen as the fault of the perpetrator. My comparison, and I'm sure other people have made this comparison, but I stumbled into it in your company when we were talking about this stuff together. For me, I always think of dyslexia. And I think of the people who were labelled stupid when they were young. And the impact that that had on their entire lives. Occasionally positive. I've had a couple of full disclosure guests who were labelled as dyslexic when they were young, were labelled as sick when they were young, but were actually incredibly bright people with dyslexia, and they've gone on to be extraordinarily high achievers. Jamie Oliver, for example, and Brian Conley as well, actually. Well, one of my favourite, but two of my favourite interviewees on Full Disclosure, which will be back next week, I think, don't worry. After the Christmas hiatus. But for the massive majority of people, and it's traumatic as well, you know, even if you are enormously successful in life, being labelled as stupid when you were little still sits with you. The body keeps the score, as therapists like to say, and the trauma, that childhood trauma of shame and embarrassment will stay with you, whatever you do in your life. And it wasn't your fault. You were not stupid. You were not thick. You were dyslexic or lazy. You were lazy. You're lazy boy. And you weren't lazy. You just couldn't see what everybody else could see when they stared at the page. And I'm of an age where dyslexia was coming into the mainstream, or dyslexia diagnoses were coming into the mainstream while I was running through my school days. And not quite. I'm a little bit older. Younger, I beg your pardon, for it to have been news to us. But I can remember the lads with dyslexia, and I can remember the difference that a diagnosis made. But I think, I don't know when that... It'd be interesting to see the graph, wouldn't it? It must have gone off like a rocket at some point in the 1980s, probably. Was it earlier than that? And suddenly, people are recognising that this is a very real condition that has very real impacts on loads and loads of people. And therefore... recognizing it and diagnosing it was an enormous positive. Still needs work, still not a finished project. But my goodness me, how much better it is to recognize that just because somebody has difficulty with words, or in the case of numbers, dyscalculia, is not a mark of their intelligence or their human worth, because that's what it translates into. And for me, and listen, if I turn out to be wrong about this, then you can point and laugh and point to your heart's content. But for me, ADHD feels incredibly similar. It feels as if the labels that we have applied to people and blamed them for, naughty, disobedient, chaotic, lazy, all of these labels that we apply to tiny people and blame them for, are not things that they have somehow chosen to be. It's so powerful, this. It's almost poetic. Picture yourself as a child, and then picture yourself getting into trouble, and then picture yourself in that moment of recognition, feeling regret and possibly shame. Why have I done this? Why have I done... Why? And then with regards to application, you know your homework is due, right? You know you have to hand it in tomorrow, but you're just going to read one more chapter of your book, or you're just going to watch... what am I going to do? And then suddenly an hour's gone, and you've done that. But I know I have to... I'm going to get up tomorrow, I'm going to make a timetable, and I'm going to tick things... I'm just going to get everything done. And you don't. And you get labelled. You're lazy. You're naughty. You're this, you're that, you're the other. But what if your brain is just wired a little bit differently from the kids who find it really easy to do this stuff? You're not naughtier than them, or thicker than them, or lazier than them. You're just different from them. So a diagnosis becomes really powerful, really important. And that's going to form half of the conversation that we are about to have. Because the other half is possibly an exception that proves a rule. Usually, whenever the media finds an example of somebody swinging the lead, they use it to pretend that everybody is swinging the lead. And the reality of the situation is that nobody is swinging the lead, or hardly anybody is swinging the lead. You see it everywhere. Yeah, most obviously with benefit fraud, or people claiming that unfair applications are being made, or motability cars were a big one lately, weren't they, where everyone was trying to take away. In fact, I think the government even did come along and do an incredibly mean-spirited thing just to assuage the chomping desk jockeys of Fleet Street, who didn't think that disabled people should be able to spend their own money on getting a better car than the one that they would get as a consequence of their disability allowance. So they're paying extra to go further, if you like. So, because this is the headline in The Guardian today, the NHS is overspending by £164 million a year on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder services, with an increasing amount going to unregulated private assessments. And the problem with these unregulated private assessments, The key problem is that patients could be harmed by poor continuity of care after private diagnoses. But, of course, the suspicion will also be that as demand reaches record levels, and diagnoses accordingly, as you would expect, reach record levels as well, there becomes a little bit of room for worrying that a private company might be more likely to deliver a diagnosis than the NHS. Some of the people at The Guardian have spoken to describe worryingly low percentages of the private providers that follow very, very closely the NHS guidance on this issue. But as I say, that to me at the moment is a subsidiary of the issue, because it's going to be a reason why the costs are so high. But the key reason why the costs are so high is because so many more people are coming forward to be diagnosed. And this has become, in the last 6 months, one of my favourite topics. I think that my retirement will follow my failure to find excitement in new subjects that we talk about together. As soon as I find myself presenting the same program every day with the same subjects that I don't really care about, and thumping my desk pretending to care, that's probably when I will go off and take up fishing or golf or mahjong. Is it mahjong or mahjong? It's very fashionable, apparently. I was reading at the weekend. And this one took me slightly by surprise. Even more, of course, taken by surprise to learn that a lot of you have thought for years that I might actually have ADHD, which is certainly a mark of how intimate your relationship with your favourite radio presenter or your 17th favourite radio presenter can become. And that's what really interests me, is the difference it makes to grown-ups, because everybody, there's a temptation, isn't there, a tendency for everybody to sit around moaning about an increased diagnosis of something that wasn't diagnosed on this scale when you were young. That's why I use dyslexia. There might be people listening who still think dyslexia is just made up and is a camouflage for a lack of intellectual ability or a lack of academic talent. But if I'm describing you, you are what is technically known as a complete wally. I mean, it is clearly, you only have to spend 30 seconds talking to somebody with dyslexia to understand that the way they see things is completely different from the way that I do. It's a condition. I don't know if brain wiring is a helpful phrase to use, but it's the one I usually reach for. And so ADHD is exactly the same. And listen, I don't think I've done this yet this year, although I mentioned the book that it's in yesterday. I didn't mention this, did I? When I was talking to you about pets and vets yesterday, and I said I used to be an obnoxious idiot who used to accuse people of loving their pets too much, and I don't know why I felt the need to be obnoxious and rude to you, but I was, and I apologise. I did it here as well. I was, would you believe, one of those people who would say, well, we just called it naughty in my day. I don't know what they're going on about, ADHD, DBD, CDB. We just called it naughty, and nothing a good strapping wouldn't fix. And I don't know why I'm putting on a funny voice, because I was that person. I would sit here in front of this microphone and, in good faith, thinking that I meant it, I would tell you that these were just excuses. And, I was speaking to you back then, or not, actually, because the audience was a fraction of what it is now. But I was speaking to you back then as someone who was beaten as a child and didn't change. So I would be beaten as a boy for all of those things that I just listed as labels a moment ago. I was beaten for being lazy. I was beaten for being naughty. I was beaten for being disobedient. I was beaten for being chaotic. I was physically beaten for all of those things, and I never changed. I never stopped being any of those things. So it didn't work. And yet, by the time I'm in my 30s, I'm on LBC shouting into my microphone about how these kids are getting it easy and all they need is a good talking to, or maybe even a little bit of corporal punishment because it didn't do me any harm, at which point my arm flies into the air at about 100 miles an hour and I run a very real risk of punching myself in the eye. Because it clearly did do me harm. Beating children is bad, spoiler alert, and it clearly didn't change me. It didn't make me better. So how do you end up? Well, I'll tell you how you end up, is that you're trying to comfort your younger self by pretending that what happened to them wasn't a disgusting injustice, wasn't a hideous trauma, wasn't a horrible abuse. You're trying to comfort yourself by pretending that what happened to you wasn't bad, and that's how you can end up calling for the same thing to happen to a new generation of children. So when you get your diagnosis, it sets you free. And that's why it's become one of my top 10 topics of the last 6 months. And that's why we're going to do it again today. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Explain to a sceptic. And I mean, it's up to you how nice to the sceptic you want to be. So let's use me. Let's use 40-year-old me, right? So we'll go back 14 years. Today. We'll go back 14 years today, and I'm on the radio saying there's no such thing as ADHD. These kids just need a good belting or a good talking to, or they just need to be, they need to stop wrapping them in cotton wool and make them aware of some of the harsh truths of modern existence. And you're going to, from an adult point of view, because we've talked about children a lot over the years, but it's only relatively recently we've started doing the adult diagnoses, and it happened organically, happened by accident, with people ringing in to talk about their children and then saying, oh, and by the way, James, while I was there with my boy who was having a terrible time at school, I realised that all of the things he was ticking, all of the things that he was being asked about applied to me as well. So I went for an assessment, and lo and behold, that's why my life has gone in some ways down the path that it has gone down. And that's what I want to hear about. I want to hear about the difference that it made as a way of proving to 40-year-old me, lest there be any doubt that I was an idiot. And that's a nice way of doing it, because you don't have to call anybody else an idiot. You can just call 40-year-old me an idiot. And you can do so on 03456060973. I like the story. Like is a funny word to use. I recognise the importance of the story about the unregulated private sector moving into this space. I'm less confident about you being able to tell me more about that. And that's not a criticism. It's just pointing out there'll be a lot more people out there qualified to tell me about what an adult ADHD diagnosis does than there will be people qualified to tell me what an apparent proliferation and over-reliance upon unsatisfactorily regulated private companies doing the assessments. But there will be some people out there qualified to do so. And while my switchboard is full at the moment, I can see from Rebecca's notes that two of those calls are taken up by bad lines, so they'll be free in a second. And you can then grab that to talk to me about that element of the story, the private ADHD care that is perhaps suboptimal and part of the reason why the costs are so high. But I'm most interested, and I'm firstly interested in the just the difference it makes and how you can prove via that diagnosis that 40-year-old James O'Brien was an absolute prat.
This is LBC.
You've built a career.
You've faced the challenges.
You've gained the skills to do more.
To stretch your abilities.
And help support your community.
At Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, we value life experience.
So whether your experience comes from business, healthcare, the trades, or raising a family,
your next challenge is waiting for you. Search Hampshire Police Jobs and join Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
It is 20 minutes after 12, and it is, when it's explained to you, it's pretty obvious, and the best way to explain it is probably for people of a certain age via dyslexia. But the main reason why ADHD diagnoses are rocketing is because more people are getting diagnosed with ADHD for real. You know, the helpful red herring of fakes or lead swingers, beloved of tabloid newspapers and tabloid types, though it may be, denies the rest of us the beauty and power of understanding an issue. And that's what we do together every day. We try to honour the beauty and power of understanding things. So let's start. Kip's in Colchester. Kip, what difference did it make? What happened?
Well, I just went through a lot of my life thinking that I was very different to everyone else, and the way my brain worked for, like, just felt very different to those people around me. And yeah, I'm 44, and last year, sort of the middle of last year, I got a diagnosis of ADHD.
Why did you seek it, mate?
Because I've struggled all my life with sort of mental health issues and things like that, and I make content online, and I sort of found other content creators who are sort of very big who had been talking about their ADHD and how it worked in their brains, and I was just sat there thinking, this is me. This is exactly what's happening to me. This is what's been going on with me my whole entire life. And I think the problem with me, because I was a child of the sort of 90s, ADHD was seen as a very much a sort of, it's a naughty boys thing, you know. I was never a naughty boy. I was always sort of quite well behaved, but I really struggled, especially when it got to my A levels. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't hold in the information. And I was bright and I was smart, but I just lost all focus when it came to exams. And I absolutely bombed my A levels. And I just didn't really understand why. It didn't make any sense in my head.
That comes with shame and a sense of failure, doesn't it, really?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. I was watching, like, all my friends sort of getting their grades and being excited about going to university, and I just felt like the results day, I just felt so miserable. And, you know, when you go through the process of getting diagnosed, you sort of look back and they go into your childhood, and I pulled out sort of school reports, and there were so many reports that I had that were just like, he can apply himself, but he's just doesn't pay attention. He's just not listening. And it was just like, oh my God, it all makes sense now.
So they didn't have the vocabulary to recognise what was going on through no fault of their own. That's why chronology is so important to these conversations. So you went along, you got the diagnosis. Yeah. What happened? What does it mean? What did it do?
It was a real rush of emotions, because you sort of find yourself looking back at times in your life where things have gone wrong and you've really struggled, and you can just go, God, that was what it was. And it's so nice to kind of understand myself now and see sort of in full colour everything that's gone on. But yeah, it's quite sad as well, because you just think, if I'd have had some help or support at that point, I could have maybe done better in my A-levels. I could have maybe done this or that. And it's just such a shame. I feel so sorry for past me having to struggle and sort of go through all that when I probably didn't need to.
That's a powerful and a beautiful thing to feel concern for the younger version of you. I went through it a bit myself a moment ago when I was reminiscing about being beaten. But in terms of now, in terms of adult you, how has your life changed in terms of, like, living it, as opposed to just how you feel about things?
I think I'm allowing myself to just be me more and not having to mask it. I mean, I'm sort of started titration, which is sort of taking medication
to find out the dose.
So, yes, exactly. And I'm sort of going through that at the moment. So that's sort of been a bit of a journey. But
and what does the medication take away or get or provide?
It provides sort of a bit more focus. You know, I can think to myself, oh, I'm going to go and load the washing machine. And then as soon as I get into the kitchen, I don't think, oh, I need to clean this. Oh, I need to load the dishwasher. I can sort of keep myself on track. And even sort of, I found myself driving. I'm just so much more concentrated. I'm not looking at the sat-nav screen and just sort of looking at the journey time and things like that. I'm just laser focused. So it is really helping me.
Yeah.
And it's meaning I'm doing more work and I'm feeling sort of a bit better in myself, really.
Kip, thank you. It's a lovely start. And of course, quite a few people pointing out that when we talk about an increase in diagnosis, or we talk about an over-reliance on private companies, what we're actually talking about is an enormous backlog, which is endemic across the NHS and probably exacerbated by lockdown, and the consequence, as with so much that goes on in this country, of austerity and all the rest of it. This always happens. This is why this is one of my favourite subjects. People listening to Kip, they're only one call in and they're hearing reflections of themselves. I've got half a dozen messages from people saying, oh my God, this is me. Gary is in Northwich. Gary, what's your story?
Oh, hi, James. Hello. Yeah, I was really resonating with the last caller. I was diagnosed when I was 40, but I always had sort of depression and low self-esteem throughout my life.
Right.
But when you go for the diagnosis, they ask you to go back to your school days. And I've got my school report here from when I was 10. And I've got it here. It says, I'll read it out to you.
Yeah.
It says, Gary is a lazy boy. His books are untidy and his homework has been a disgrace. He really will have to improve dramatically next year, otherwise his exam papers will not even be marked. Now, my mum passed away when I was 27.
Yeah.
So I didn't, and it was when I was 40 I was diagnosed. But looking back through this, I've got, my mum's written a note for me in here, basically saying how proud she was of me. And what she says in here, I can see your reports now when you go to secondary school. You'll forget your prep book. You'll not have done your homework. Oh, well, here's the next 7 years. But by the way, did I tell you that I love you and I'm proud of you?
Oh, but
I never had that. I never had that because she was an alcoholic and she had her own problems.
So she could write this stuff privately in a box and she never actually shared it with you?
Never shared it with me.
I'm sorry.
That really made a massive, massive difference.
In a good way?
In a good way, in a really positive way.
Because
you don't get that as a kid. You know, you don't get that sort of people telling you you're proud of you.
Some of us do. Some of us did, mate. It's one of the great unfairnesses. What do you remember about 10-year-old Gary? So he must have known that his teachers were getting cross with him, but he wasn't getting up every morning and thinking, right, I'm going to make a mess of my prep books and I'm going to get on my teeth. I mean, what do you remember about him?
I didn't do it on purpose.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I know you didn't.
Yeah.
But who were you? Who was he?
I was creative. I was thoughtful. I was caring. And even like looking at my mum's notes on here, she points out that one teacher really was amazing, understood you. And you were so confident, you did so much better that year. Then you got another teacher who was very draconian.
Yes.
And that really pushed you down, you know. So I think I've got my own kids now and they struggle.
Sure.
But I just try and tell them, you know, from like how my mum in this book was with me, I'm so proud of you. You know, like my daughter, she struggles with maths, she might have dyscalculia. She's amazing at music. And I just say, look, you're a musician. That's what you're going to be good at, you know, and just sort of... but now, there's no support after I got my diagnosis. I've had to do it all on my own.
Yeah, this is part
of it. And it's only this last year. I've started my own business, so I work full-time. I've got a business in my spare time. I'm only starting to make some money from it now. And that business is helping other people with ADHD. I make a planner that I use to help my own life, and I sell it online, and other people report back and get good reviews that it's helping them. So I think, I don't know, it's just...
What prompted you at 40 to make the call or to seek the diagnosis?
I was just, I was depressed again, just constantly depressed, really low self-esteem. And I saw a video, I think it was How to ADHD, and she was just talking online about inattentive ADHD, which is what I'm diagnosed with.
Right.
And it just resonated with me. So I just started getting some books. I've always read and took an interesting thing. I think one of the things with ADHD is you can get hyper-focused.
Yes, I've heard that phrase, yes.
Yeah, then I tried to get an appointment. I had to eventually go private because the waiting list was so long.
So that's kind of missing from the coverage today. Is it the reason why people are going... Well, it's not missing entirely, but it's the reason why people are going privately is because they're aware of the difference that it would make. And now the NHS is referring people to the private sector for the same reason. I love that. You really got me there. So I don't want to say goodbye without saying a little bit more about 10-year-old Gary and the fact that you didn't even know your mum was in your corner because of her condition and her issues, but you discover when she dies that she was all along.
Yeah, 100%. But I'd say to anyone, if you're waiting for a diagnosis and you feel like you've got it, just have more confidence in yourself, you know, and believe in yourself. There are books out there, there's resources out there.
There is, and I'll find out more about yours. Stay on the line. Tell Eleanor the details of what it is that you're doing. I just need to double-check things before we can mention it online or anything like that. But and, of course, you might not want us to. But in the meantime, thank you. And love to both of you. Love to you and love to 10-year-old you as well. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Around 2,000 people, including members of the armed forces, are now said to have been killed in protests in Iran. It's the first time officials in Tehran have provided any kind of figure since the unrest began around 2 weeks ago. Around 25,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex still have no water for a fourth day. Storm Goretti is being blamed for the supply issues, which began on Saturday. South East Water has apologised. And the families of some of the Britons killed in last summer's Air India crash have filed a lawsuit against the airline. All but one of the 242 people on board the Gatwick-bound flight died when it came down just after takeoff in Ahmedabad in June. LBC weather, most of the UK will see showers this afternoon, starting to brighten up in Northern Ireland later, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol.
Hey, up. Looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the conversation returns to... it's not well-trodden territory, but it's increasingly familiar as we learn the rocketing costs of ADHD care being met by the NHS, and such are the backlogs. And the lack of resources that the NHS is increasingly turning to private assessment companies, which is suboptimal for a whole host of reasons, about which I am keen to learn more. But in the first instance, the thing that interests me most, and you as well, is the... difference that a diagnosis makes. And I think partly out of penance, that sort of Catholic concept of penance. You go to confession and the priest gives you 10 Hail Marys to make up for all the sinning that you've done. And I feel a sense of penance when we talk about things like this, because I was not that long ago part of the problem. I used to, for reasons I have unpicked actually and worked out, most simply expressed as a desire to convince yourself that no harm was done to you by things. I used to argue that these acronyms or these initializations of ADHD or ADD or oppositional defiance disorder, all of these things that very, very clever people have done an awful lot of work identifying and distinguishing and making distinct. I used to argue it was all a load of old nonsense from a position of epic ignorance. I could have, if my life had gone differently, I could have been a Daily Mail columnist by now. Absolute no understanding whatsoever of the issues, but the strongest imaginable opinions. And this would be a really good example of that. Happily, I didn't go down that path. So I know that a diagnosis even perhaps especially late in life can make a world of difference. And so I'm just gathering stories this afternoon, including yours, Sarah, on the Isle of Wight. What made you pick up the phone?
Hi there. thank you so much for your article. It's just mean so much, because that voice isn't out there, I don't think, for older people or even for younger people, for any age, because the schools are underfunded, kids aren't getting the diagnosis they need, they're missing out on education. And I know that because I've got a 25-year-old who, with anxiety, can be a big part of ADHD.
Yes.
A lot of the youngsters are suffering with that now, and I was a big sufferer from a certain age. When I try to think back sometimes how long, but I think all of my life.
You can't remember not being anxious. You've probably got some idealised childhood memory of riding your bicycle down the garden or something like that. But mostly your tummy is a place of tightness when you think of your childhood.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Just feeling generally really, really uncomfortable in the environment. Being very, very scared of teachers. They were so misunderstanding, and being then coming down on you know, like a thunderbolt.
Yes. Because,
and the surprise, it's like, what have I done? I don't understand, you know. And the penance thing, I mean, talking about it really touched me what you said about your parental experiences with aggression. So my father was very violent.
But it wasn't my dad that beat me, it was my teachers. Don't get me wrong, sorry. No, absolutely not.
Sorry,
no, it was my headmaster at prep school. My dad was a wonderful man.
Sorry, okay.
That's all right.
Sorry.
I was luckier than you, I think.
So my dad was a policeman, and quite often these characters like the status of the uniform, but he bullied my brother and myself terribly. I mean, if I was to jiggle, I love music, I'm a musician. I've only recently started calling myself that, a musician. At the age of 18, I was Royal Schools of Music, grade 8, in two instruments, which is already a professional level, a degree at 23, finished that, and then a criminal record at 24, because I was so out there with my behaviour. I mean, extremely funny, extremely active, always dancing around and cracking jokes. But that got me into trouble.
What happened? I mean, I'm not confused about why it took so long, because the world has changed and your place in it feels different now from how it did when you were young. But why did you finally make the decision to seek a diagnosis?
I think the criminal record at 24, when I was so talented, really knocked me to my got to the ground.
Yeah.
And I ended up then
Can I ask what you got? What did you get into trouble for, if you don't mind me asking?
Fighting the police, funnily enough.
I thought when I heard your voice. I thought, there's a police fighter. There's a lot going on there for Sigmund Freud, isn't there? Because what you were really doing, Sarah, of course, was fighting your father. I'm just going to stroke
absolutely
my beard for a minute now at this point.
Yeah, he's still alive and he's still doing it, but he can only do it verbally now.
Okay.
But anyway, mum's lovely.
Yes.
So I think I need to get to the point, which, so I saw the diagnosis at 59.
Yes.
Because I've had such a disastrous life.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I felt very guilty and very ashamed of my behaviours over the years, because also I like to drink, and I've liked to smoke cannabis, which
sure
itself
medicating. Yes, and it doesn't solve anything. It just sort of temporarily numbs some of the feelings that you've described.
I think cannabis can be beneficial for people with ADHD, and that's something else that people don't understand.
Maybe.
But you can get it on prescription.
You're getting distracted again, which I appreciate is part
yes,
of, it's
I am.
It's partly my fault.
That's
so
part of ADHD, though. I won't be able to focus on what I'm talking about.
No, well, that's
about
my job, to make you focus, although, goodness knows, we're on a hiding to nothing with us two. So I'll probably go off on a mad tangent in about 14 seconds' time. So, 59, okay. You saw the diagnosis. What happened? Talk me through the moment.
I got the diagnosis. The doctor doesn't want to know. I was hoping that I could get some medication to stop myself from leaning.
But has it had an impact on you? Has it had a positive impact on you, or has it just sort of underlined what
it helped
you
me. So I now know I'm not mad.
Yes.
I'm not completely mad. I don't have a psychiatric problem. I know what the problem is, but what the bigger problem is, the issues around me in society. I've had people close to me saying, sorry, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I've got one of those in my inbox now, whose own dad doesn't believe that his own son has a medical condition. So he said, imagine that he was short-sighted, Dad. Would you tell him just to see harder? Would you tell him just to try and look hard, to work harder on being able to see clearly? Because that's what you're doing when you deny the existence of ADHD or back in the day, dyslexia. It doesn't...
Well, the funny thing is, a lot of these things are hereditary anyway. They pass down through families. And I think the reason my dad was so aggressive was because he was autistic. And he got into a rage when things didn't go his way. And that was the only way he could express himself. And I think he's realised that, watching Chris Packham.
Yeah.
And something that my mum and dad looked at each other and said, my God, that's you.
Wow.
And so I think that, and that we're going back another generation. There's no way, so it's quite sad for him as well. So I try to use compassion. If only he could start being a bit nicer in the present.
Yes. I mean, that's very generous of you, but, you know, that's family, isn't it? No one's got a relationship with anybody in their life like the relationships they've got with their family. But you're making progress. I'm sorry you're not getting all of the help and support that you clearly deserve, Sarah. Sarah, I think of you now as Sarah the musician on the Isle of Wight. But as you said yourself, it's you're in a better place than you were before. 12:41 is the time. Christian's in Twickenham. Christian, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I just want to say, firstly, thank you for speaking about this. It's a real great help.
I wouldn't say it was my pleasure necessarily, but I find it genuinely fascinating, so there's no need to thank me.
Okay, well, no, okay. The reason I'm ringing is because I'm meant to be ringing the doctor today. My wife, who's helped me massively in this, she's helped me massively my whole life with sort of depression and realising I can do something about it, I can help myself. I'm meant to be ringing because I've got onto the system about 2 years ago. I'm not exactly sure. I've lost track of time now. I recently got a phone call or an email, can't remember which way around it was, to say I'm going to be contacted by someone. And I was very excited about that, just to finally have a diagnosis. My son's got it. He's been diagnosed privately so we could get his schooling up and running. He was 3 years behind, 5 years ahead with his comprehension,
yeah.
3 years behind with his schooling because he's got dyslexia as well. Absolutely. On that note, I think my dad possibly had it. He had every hobby going ever. He was quick to rage, he was very depressive as well. And I think if I'd been able to tell him about it before he passed away, I think it might have changed the last part of his life. He might have been easier on himself.
Yeah.
As I now am being easier on myself. But the thing is, I've got onto the system and then they finally got hold of me and then they said, yeah, great. There was a bit of to and fro. And then it was going to happen. And then they came back to me and said, I'm really sorry. Well, actually, they didn't really say sorry. You're on the wrong postcode. We do TW1, TW2. I'm TW3. They then jumped to TW9 or whatever
so
it was.
So you got done by the red tape, by the logistics.
Yeah.
Of it all. And now you're poised to make the phone call to try to set up a new appointment.
But I don't know really what I'm asking for anymore. I don't really understand the whole process, which might sound stupid, but
I'd like to be assessed for ADHD.
Well, yeah, and that, even that, I don't really. I almost didn't want to speak to you because I feel a sense of
why. What?
Oh, sorry. Luckily, on the last thing, there's a lot of things to make me laugh, which sort of helped. But it's just a lifetime of feeling different and out of place and that sort.
Well, you've heard all the other callers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've got mates that understand. I've got other mates that go, oh, it's the trendy thing to come up with these days. And I'm like, if you had any idea what this thing is, if I have it, I don't even know. I don't really want to say it, but, you know, I walk downstairs sometimes with my jeans half on, one sock on, T-shirt on, well, I draped over my arm, and that's me ready. I want to get on to the next thing, and I kind of now realise, actually, that's part of it, and it makes me laugh.
Yes.
I don't get stuck in the supermarket for 3 hours when I go to buy, you know, when I smoke down in Brighton, I went out to buy Rizzlers, and I was gone the whole day. I came back with 3 books on bonsai, because I've been talking to the bonsai man for hours and hours, and I was convinced I was going to be a bonsai guy. Never did it, ever, which is a shame, because I love gardening.
Hyper-focus. Well, you know, small steps.
Yeah.
One thing at a time. Mates who say it doesn't exist, I wonder if you should ask them if they'd tell somebody to stop having cancer or to stop having a broken leg or something like that. It's so odd, isn't it, with neuro conditions or mental health conditions that people feel empowered to sit in judgment on what other people know to be true. I don't know where the impulse comes from, why they don't want to believe, but they wouldn't say it to someone with a broken leg or someone with bad eyesight. You just need to try harder to see over there.
Yeah.
You just need to try harder. It's mad.
I think for most, I don't know if I can speak for everyone, but I think it's not having the label that we want. We don't want to feel special or whatever. You know, some people say it's a superpower. I get it sometimes. Most often in my life, I've never felt that. I've just felt different.
I'm not surprised from what you've said, but I think it's worth making the call. And I think all you're doing is seeking, and your wife will help you. I'd like to get assessed for ADHD, please.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've already got that. Gone down that path, it's hit the dead end. I need help is
well, you
tricky.
Know what you know what Chumbawamba had to say about that,
yeah.
Christian.
I get down,
we get knocked down and we get up again, never gonna get knocked down. You have to. I mean, it's the way these things work, but don't let one, and I know it's easier said than done, but don't let one knock back push you off the path entirely, because it's a path that all the other callers today have really made clear is a path worth staying on, isn't it?
It's just the, like, so, yeah, it's the understanding. That's all we want, not the label. Just, I think, the understanding.
Don't worry about the label. Don't worry about the label. No, I don't mean it. Don't make that little noise. Don't worry about the label. It's just giving a name to something. The world would make no sense whatsoever if things didn't have names. You'd go to the cupboard to get a teapot and you'd come back with a bonsai book. It's got to have a name, otherwise you don't know what you're doing half the time. So it's just a useful, the name is useful. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about what other people do with that name. Just worry about what the name will do for you, and it will give you a bit of clarity and understanding. I really think so.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, and promise me at least that you'll try.
I will. It's helped a lot, actually, just to kind of focus my attention. I'm going to be putting Christmas decorations away as well, and that's getting caught up in.
Can't use me as an excuse. So I've got enough. Still got some up outside, actually. Thank you, Christian. Take care, mate. Stay safe. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Asma Mir.
Do Donald Trump's positions on Iran, Venezuela and Greenland now mean that he can do and say whatever he wants? And are you comfortable with that?
Asma Mir at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Hi Derek, Tara from Flash Designs here. Hope you're well. Not sure if you've seen my emails from last month, but could you please pay my invoice? Thank you so much. Bye. Hi, it's Tara, Flash Designs. Did you get my last voicemail? I know you're busy, but please pay my invoice today, if possible. Hello, again. It's Tara, again. Politely nudging, again.
Still chasing unpaid invoices? Let Sage Copilot help do the chasing so you can get paid up to 7 days faster. Search Sage Accountant today.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It's 10 to 1. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I wish I could, we need the technology and the attention span, but I've got the complaint of the year so far from Andrew, who acknowledges that he is being challenging in his behaviour with this complaint. I'm sorry to be that person, he writes, but it's Chumbawamba, not Chumbawamba. Who put the U in Wamba? I think that's just the way I talk. I mean, if you'd asked me to spell it, I probably would have said Chumbawamba with a U. But does it sound that different? No one says Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba? Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba. I told you I was going to get distracted while I was talking to Sarah, but at least I hung on for long enough to listen to lovely Christian Chumbawamba. Anyway, I digress. The difference that a diagnosis makes, and the later in life it is, in many ways, the more interesting it becomes, but not, of course, the more important. Hayden is in Leeds. Hayden, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of say my story and kind of what I've kind of experienced with this so far. So I was diagnosed last, summer into the autumn, and it came off the back of some, like, issues that I was having at work. So I was put on, like, an improvement plan thing, and a lot of the things that came through in it, I was looking at it going, like, this is really familiar. Like, this looks like my school report. It looks like all the things that I've had my whole life.
Right.
And it was kind of like, okay, right, it's, you can get through it in school and uni and whatnot, but as soon as it was in the workplace, I was like, I need to work. I need a job. So I need to just kind of sort this out. But obviously, without that kind of diagnosis or anything like that, it's really hard to be like, oh, well, this is what I'm doing because of this. So they kind of go, okay, like, sure. So I got the diagnosis.
Through work, was it? Or did you do it independently?
No, I did it independently.
Okay.
That was another side thing. I actually had a really great experience with my diagnosis.
Good.
It was really fast. I didn't really experience any of the kind of long waiting things that a lot of people experience. But yeah, so I did it privately. It was done within about 6 months. And yeah, it was really freeing for me, like, just having that put in stone, I guess. Like,
why?
I think a big part, I'm a musician, so that's what I do. I teach children music.
Oh, wow.
And for a lot of my life, I was not very academic. I really struggled with maths and English, and kind of getting through my GCSEs were a real sort of task. God, I've lost my train of thought now.
No, that's all right. And so knowing, because I think what I was thinking of listening to you and to everyone this hour is that what people grew up with was a sense that the world thought they were choosing to do these things that they did.
Yeah.
Or not, perhaps, do the things that they should have done more pertinently sometimes. And that leaves you with guilt and shame and a sense of failure, because why couldn't I do it? And what you're learning is why you couldn't do it, or at least why you didn't do it. And it's not because you wanted to be troublesome, or you wanted to cause problems, or you wanted to draw attention to yourself, or any of these things. There is another reason why you didn't do those things, and it wasn't your fault.
Yeah, for sure. And I think as well, like, my my older brother, he was very kind of neurotypical, like, was very good at academics, kind of went to uni, did a very academic degree. And I, like I said, I've done kind of music my whole life, and that's kind of been what I'd put all my eggs in that basket, I guess. So looking at, like, my brother and being like, oh, why can't I just go and study, like, economics?
Well, and did people say that to you? Did people say, why can't you be more like your brother? Or was it just yourself beating yourself up?
Yeah, well, it's a weird one, because we went, obviously, to the same school, and my brother is he's 5 years older than me. So there was a lot of, like, oh, your brother was this and your brother was that. And he had his flaws at school. He wasn't, like, a golden student, but, like, it was definitely your brother did this and you're not doing this. And it was like, okay, well, we are different people, and I'm doing this thing. I'm doing music, and he's doing, you know, economics. Like, it's very different here.
And how did you get better at work once you'd got the diagnosis, and what happened next? I presume you did.
Yeah. So actually, once I got the diagnosis, my, like, line manager, he had a conversation with me, and he was saying that he was ADHD as well, which I didn't know. And I think the issue was that we weren't seeing eye to eye, and my issues were coming out, and he was having a problem with these issues.
Okay.
And, you know, some of them, rightfully so.
Yeah, okay.
But then once the diagnosis came in, it was kind of like we both were able to go, like, oh, okay, I understand you and you understand me. And we were able to work on the issues in a more positive way than it just being like, Hayden, why are you not doing this? And even just for myself, going like, okay, I might not be like every other music teacher that works in schools, but this is who I am, and it's, you know, ADHD, I think, has made me the person and the musician and the creative person that I am.
And have people outside work noticed a change? Do people think you're a bit lighter?
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially like my partner, like, like some of the other callers, it's a lot of kind of built up kind of energy, and I suppose like an anger or a rage, I suppose. And I guess just being able to, if I was ever in that situation and feeling them feelings, being able to just be like, okay, it's not necessarily me and issues that I have with you or people around me. It's like, I just can't help but feel like this sometimes. And just having a lot of context for my family was just really nice.
Yeah, knowledge is power. I know it's a cliche. Understanding things is the first step to, well, clarity is the first step towards acceptance, I think. You can't accept something. You can't sit with something if you don't know what it is. You don't fully understand what it is. So much self-flagellation here, isn't there? There's so many callers, and I mean, they're the tip of the iceberg compared to what else is coming into the studio, but the idea, and that's the maddest thing about it, is that teachers and parents would give you a really hard time without knowing that you were beating yourself up much more severely than they ever could, physically or emotionally, because you didn't want to be doing the things, or didn't want to be doing the things that you were doing. And now what a diagnosis does is give you the reason, the context for that behaviour. 12:57, a shorter time. Asthma is poised and ready to go. So, Julian, County Durham, you will have to be brief, but I hope we can get the gist of your contribution. What would you like to say?
It was just to say that I waited 6 years for my diagnosis, but it was worth it. That's how long I was on the waiting list for.
Wow.
And that's probably why so many people do go private.
NHS is now sending people private in the hope of bringing down these waiting lists. In a nutshell, what difference did it make? Better late than never, wise.
I just feel completely validated. I can now, when I'm struggling with something, I can explain to people, oh, I'm sorry, this is just how my brain works. It's not that I'm lazy. It's not that I'm dopey. That was used to be my nickname. And
really? People actually called you that?
Yeah.
It's not fun. Well, I mean, it's good that you can laugh about it, but that wasn't fair.
No. Well, I actually called them out on it at Christmas because somebody brought up and I said, that's ableist. I've got ADHD.
Yeah, good for you. Well, what about the people who are dopey? We need to start worrying about them now, the ones who have explanations for it or distractions. That's lovely. I'm so glad that it... I mean, 6 years isn't fair, but... it's better than not happening at all, isn't it? And I hope Christian gets his diagnosis or his assessment in place sooner, much sooner rather than later, as indeed does everybody listening to the programme today. Julie, thank you. Bringing in almost perfectly on time, which is almost a first. Make of that what you will. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or indeed the LBC app. Stay up to date, top stories, opinions, news categories. I've read this out so often now, I'm just going to start missing out random words. Pause, or do you want best bits from my LBC show every day? Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now, standing in for Sheila Fogarty, it's Asma Mir.
James, thank you very much for that. Donald Trump meeting his national security team later on today to discuss what action the US will take against Iran. He's already decided any countries doing business with Iran will face a 25% tariff on trade with the US. He's removed the president of Venezuela. He wants to acquire Greenland. Are we going to nod this all through? Is this the new reality? The US under Trump did broker the peace deal between Israel and Hamas. We must not forget that. But the question today is, can Donald Trump do and say whatever he wants? And are you comfortable with that?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, officials in Tehran say around 2,000 people have been killed in anti-regime demonstrations in Iran. It's the first time authorities have acknowledged the high death toll since protests began 2 weeks ago. The US president is expected to meet with his top advisers later to explore options to put pressure on Iran. Justin Forsyth, an advisor to the exiled Crown Prince of Iran, has told LBC something had to be done.
That we need some military action from the United States to send a warning shot across the Iranian regime because they're massacring people. Thousands and thousands of people are being killed. We know the Americans won't put boots on the ground and we don't want them to. This has to be an Iranian revolution. It's Iranians on the ground that are dying. Iranians are boots on the ground, but we do need some military action.
The water watchdog has raised concerns as 25,000 properties are affected by supply issues across Kent and Sussex for a fourth day. South East Water has blamed Storm Goretti for the disruption, which began on Saturday, and has apologised. The Liberal Democrat MP for Tunbridge Wells, Mike Martin, has called for the company's chief executive to resign. His party's leader, Sir Ed Davey, has told LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, he agrees.
It shows what a shocking state the water industry is in. I'm afraid the chief executive of the water company involved, frankly,
I can't... They gave themselves an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, well, I think he should be fired. I can't believe, with the failure after failure, continual failure, that this water company is allowed to keep this management and continue to keep failing the people of Kent.
The families of some of the British passengers who died in last summer's Air India plane crash are suing the airline. All but one of the 242 people on board the Gatwick-bound flight died when it came down just after takeoff in Ahmedabad in June. Court records show a personal injury motion was filed by 11 claimants. South Korea's special prosecutor has requested the death penalty for former President Yoon Suk-yeol. He was charged with insurrection over his brief imposition of martial law in December 2024. And the Scottish Government will deliver its final budget ahead of May's Holyrood elections later. Finance Secretary Shona Robertson will set out her tax and spending plans. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 2 points at 10,138. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, most of the UK will see showers this afternoon, starting to brighten up in Northern Ireland later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Australia is on sale now with Qantas, the spirit of Australia. Swap grey skies for blue and experience the magic of Australia in the sky from the moment you step on board. With a warm Aussie welcome and premium produce, you'll feel like you're already there. Book now at Qantas.com or speak to your travel agent. Hurry, sale ends Jan 20. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Asma Mir.
Good afternoon to you. It is 3 minutes past one. This is Asma Mir on LBC, sitting in for Sheila Fogarty. Sheila is back tomorrow between now and 4 o'clock. We are going to talk about this, what looks like this ever nearing social media ban for under 16s. It could happen within months, not years. We're also going to talk about whether politics or international politics has any place in schools. Should we be cancelling visits by MPs who hold positions that some people disagree with, or should schools be a politics-free zone? But we are going to start, of course, with the biggest story right now, and that is what is happening in Iran and what is happening in Washington, because Donald Trump later on is going to meet his national security team to discuss what action the US will take against Iran. It may be military action, it may be regime change. That is on the higher end of the spectrum of all the options available to America. He's already decided that any countries doing business with Iran will face a 25% tariff on trade with the US. But let's just look at just January, really. Remove the president of Venezuela. He wants to acquire Greenland. Are we going to go along with all of this? Should someone other than people like perhaps you or me or whoever it is, should someone with a stronger voice be speaking out? Or is this just a new reality now? Can Donald Trump do whatever he wants now? Do his positions on Iran, Venezuela and Greenland mean that he can now do or say he wants to do whatever he wants? And are you comfortable with that? You may be. You may look at the situation with the peace deal that was brokered between Israel and Hamas and say, well, look, that's what he did or helped to do. So I am comfortable if he wants to go in all guns blazing and fix things. But let me know what you think. Can Donald Trump do or say whatever he wants now? And are you comfortable with that? 0345 6060 973. Let's focus in just for a second then on the situation in Iran. It's still ongoing, of course. Very difficult to know what is going on there because of this internet blackout. but it looks pretty bad. The actor and comedian Omid Jalili has been campaigning against the Iranian regime. And he said to Andrew Marr on LBC last night that these protests are different to other uprisings that have taken place in the country.
The people of Iran right now, they are on the streets. The last we heard, they don't even care what Donald Trump has said, that the Iranian regime has contacted them and wants to negotiate. And the people of Iran, I'm following everything very clearly on Instagram and Telegram, and they're saying, we are out in numbers. The atmosphere is incredible. People are not going to stop because they're at that stage in their lives where it's better to, you know, this is their words, better to die on your feet than live on your knees. What's different this time? That's the main question. What is different? The difference is you've got at least some kind of figurehead, a symbol of unity. That seems to be Reza Pahlavi, who is the son of the former Shah, who represents an idea that he will come back not to reestablish the monarchy, not to assume power, but he feels it's his responsibility to at least help the country transition into democratic, secular a government. And possibly if there was a monarchy, it would certainly be a constitutional monarchy like Britain. It would work alongside a secular government.
That was Omid Jalili. Now, speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast, Justin Forsyth, who's an advisor to the Crown Prince of Iran, said something had to be done.
Millions of protesters are still on the streets. The numbers last night were still very high. Obviously, the violence by the regime, the massacres, it's not just hundreds. We're talking thousands and thousands of people that have been killed. We don't have the exact numbers, but the reports that we're getting from towns and cities across Iran and from doctors and hospitals, from morgues, show the numbers are going to be much higher. So if we don't act, more people will be killed. But the Iranian people are extraordinarily resilient. They've been waiting for this moment for decades. They're on the streets protesting, trying to bring down this regime. We're also, and Reza Pahlavi has led this effort.
He's the Crown Prince of Iran, just remind everybody. Do go on, sir. Yeah, do go on. Yep.
The Crown Prince of Iran, but also, actually, more importantly, the leader of the Democratic Opposition Movement. Republicans, left, right, everyone supports him on the streets, not just monarchists. We've been working, or he's been working very hard to create defections in the regime. We've had tens of thousands of people in the police and army begin to break with the regime. Many of them haven't gone out on the streets. Some of them have overtly come to us to ask to join with the people. That's going to be a very important strategy in terms of breaking this regime and pushing for change. That we need some military action from the United States to send a warning shot across the Iranian regime because they're massacring people. Thousands and thousands of people are being killed. We know the Americans won't put boots on the ground, and we don't want them to. This has to be an Iranian revolution. It's Iranians on the ground that are dying. Iranians are boots on the ground. But we do need some military action to knock out some of these Iranian Revolutionary Guards operations and institutions that are really leading this charge in terms of killing people and arresting them. But on top of that, Britain can also do a lot. Britain hasn't proscribed the Revolutionary Guard. They're a terrorist organization. They are operating in London. They're operating in Manchester. They're threatening to kill people. They have a network of front organizations. We can also help keep communications into Iran open. Starlink, which is Elon Musk's network, is very important. But Britain could do more to help make sure